You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Jay Cutler, starting a new podcast called Uncut with Jay Cutler. Most of you know me from the NFL, some of you have seen me on Instagram, and some of you know me from the reality TV world. Each week I'm taking you along with me as we discuss football, trending topics, and whatever's going on in my life each week. I'm bringing along people that are special in my life, former teammates, friends, and some new people that I like and respect. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Podcasting? I think I'm doing this right. Can't wait to get started with you. Go subscribe now. Uncut with Jay Cutler. Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify. Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is Arturo Galletti of Sports Grid Data Science, and we are continuing the Over-Under podcast that we did. You can listen to last week's on the Eastern Conference. This one is on the Western Conference, and lots of great stuff in here. If you want more of the kind of background on the information that we use, that is at the front of the Eastern Conference pod. We didn't work all the way through it again. We know that you have access to it. And also the note that I said before that I used an aggressive noise filter on this, so there might be a couple of words that are out, but I think it's all there. When I've listened to it, it sounds pretty good. I just wanted to do that because I thought the ambient noise that was in it was a little bit bothersome, so I wanted to take that out as best I could. It was actually an experiment with that for me. A little bit of colorful language here, not a ton of it there. Just wanted to note that at the outset. This one is a behemoth, over 2 hours. Lots of great stuff, though. I hope you really enjoy it. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be on. Let's get to part two.
Yeah, and if for those who want an explanation of some of the metrics that we're using and everything else, that is mostly in the Eastern Conference one because that has been released first. You can go there to listen at the opening of that podcast. Well, of course, some of them we'll get information on now. And as usual, we start these from the lowest over-under number to the highest. So in the Western Conference, that means starting with the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I want to make a mention before we get into it, because it's going to become more important in the West, is we're going to talk a little bit about like teams that are public on over-under bets and teams that are not public. And that means that like the line is set artificially high because Vegas knows that like the fans for a particular fan base would bet on a team, or it's set artificially low because they want to draw money to a team that generally doesn't, or because of other effects.
Right? Yeah, because they're trying to get money on both sides of it. They're trying to get action a lot of different ways. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, yeah, if you could get 60% betting on the wrong side, that would be great, but that can get a little bit challenging.
That can because when the dog hits, basically everybody in Vegas has a bad day. So
exactly,
what they try to do is try to get even money on both sides. And I say for the West, it becomes more of an issue because there are some heavy public teams in the West, and there are some schedule effects.
There are, because there are only two teams in the NBA that have a consistent, persistent home court advantage. Those are the two teams at the highest altitude, the Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets, both of which occur in the Western Conference. We'll talk about both of them at various points during this. But let's start with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They had this super weird year where they were competitive partially by winning a bunch of really close games in the early part, and they sat all of their good players, and so they ended up with a 22-50 record. They traded away Al Horford originally for Kemba Walker and then bought out Kemba Walker, so they now have basically kind of nobody in that slot. Unsurprisingly, Sam Presti is giving a lot of his minutes to very young players, whether they are rookies or not. Guys like Pokuševski, of course, is going to play a lot. Shea will hopefully play a lot, because I really like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. And Vegas is very skeptical. Their line is extremely low. It is basically 22 either way. So if you want to go over, it's 22 and above. Sorry, I got that wrong. So if you want to go under, yeah, no, that's right. If you want to go over, it's 22 and above. If you want to go under, it's 22 and below.
See if you agree with me on this statement. OKC is a G League, is a glorified G League with SGA as kind of like the Rolls Royce parked in the garage.
So I think Shea is a big enough exception to that. I also like, I mean, even though Derek Favors looked a little bit toast to me, but I mean, they've got talent. I mean, Lu Dort is better than any guy in the G League. Like
the thing about this is a glorified. It's basically it's an audition roster for Oklahoma City 2 years from now. Really, they're really kind of trying to figure out who on this team is gonna be part of a long term deal with Shea, which is fine. And they've got a bunch of like, and the reason I say that is that they've got a ton of draft picks. And functionally, when you have that many draft picks, unless you're moving them, really what you're trying to do is you're trying to churn roster and turn like you know three draft picks into one starter or better player, right? That's really kind of what we're trying to do, what they're trying to do. So functionally, they're not, I don't think they're in it to win basketball games necessarily. They're more to kind of figure out and get reps on the guys. I mean, they're going to win basketball games occasionally because, they're going to play hard. It's just, they're not actively trying to lose, but they are more concerned with getting reps on the guys they want to get reps on. So they're more concerned with getting like Theo Maddlebaum reps or Poku reps or kind of Josh Giddey reps. I love Josh Giddey, but like this is if Josh Giddey was on a team where he basically was making passes to guys who could do more with them, then I would love him more. It's just this year I think that it's a bit of a rough situation for the skill set. I love his skill set. I love his size. Like I called him Tall Ricky Rubio on the draft in my draft preview, which is good. This is really nice. But they're the worst team in the league, right?
Yeah, I think they are. And
clearly the worst. I mean, I think that, like, is there any team in a series they would get to six games on?
I mean, I think they would get to six on the Rockets potentially and Magic. It depends on who those guys actually play. Like, if it's full strength, then it's different. But I mean, I think the Rockets are going to move some of their guys. I think the Magic, they're going to rest some of their guys, not in a theoretical seven game series. But yeah. I would say
they also have the third most rookie minute, most minutes going to rookie in our projection. They have 60% of their minutes are going straight up to rookies, and the minutes that aren't going to rookies, like I'm going to say, it's going to be like 70% going to like second year guys,
to like young dudes. Yeah, I mean like Tao Maledon and Poku and
this.
Leo.
I need to look, but this might be one of the youngest teams we've ever seen.
It's going to be very young. Also, the Thunder are it's pretty clear where their motivation lies. You know that they're going in a specific direction, and I don't think it's going to be necessarily as egregious as the times the Trust the Process Sixers, where they were playing just like non-NBA players. Like, I think these are guys that have a chance.
There are guys on this team who are not going to be on the roster in 2 years.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But they're also like, I mean, I like Isaiah Roby.
That's by design. The Thunder have actually taken some shots of it. Like, I thought the Dort shot was interesting. I still think that there's potential there. It's just like...
Oh, I like Lu Dort a lot.
Yeah, but he's so raw. He's so damn raw.
Yeah, and they put the ball in his hands more. So the argument that people who will go on the over here will use is that in the 35 games that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played, the Thunder were 16-19. And I mean, that is a meaningful thing to know, and like that they did that. But a lot of those wins were extremely close, and a lot of those losses were extremely big. And that's why I often mention differential, is because generally speaking, differential is more predictive. And so, like, is there a way that
there isn't anybody on this team, on the top six outside of Shea, that would start on a conference final?
Oh, no. I mean, there aren't any guys other than Shea that are particularly close to being top 20, top 30 at their position.
Yeah, I'm probably not being fair to. I think Giddey could probably be that second guy. I really like Giddey. I thought that Australia really missed him in the Olympics. But yeah, I mean, this is a really rough roster to me. Like, this is where I come back to. It's like this is significantly worse than any other team in the world. Well, we can argue about Houston, but like. Even Houston's rookies have more bona fides than the guys outside of Shea on this team.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. The other challenge for OKC is just kind of think about, other than Shai, and then that's an important caveat. Well, okay, what is going to be their identity on defense? What is going to be their identity on offense? And Shai running pick and roll can be their identity on offense whenever he's on the floor. If Giddey has a nice rookie year, then he can get there. I've gotten to see very little film on him because he didn't really play in summer league. He turned his ankle on the third possession of the game and then played a little bit after that, but barely. And then that was that. And yeah, I mean, I think they're going to give the ball to Poku a lot. I think Trey Mann is going to be a part of it. Ty Jerome, Teo Mallett. But defensively, Favors, maybe they play him some. Muscala isn't great defensively. Robinson Earl is more of a four to me than a five. I could see them being decent offensively in Shai's minutes. I think there is absolutely an argument for that. And for that, when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played last year, the Thunder had a 30th percentile offense and a 17th percentile defense. That 30th percentile offense is significantly better than they were the rest of the time. So even if you want to say they'll be bad but not terrible offensively when Shai's on the floor, and maybe they'll even be a little bit better, maybe you argue that their talent is a little more conducive, they're going to be terrible when he's off the floor. They're going to be bad defensively the whole time. So, I can see a path. I think Mark Daigneault is a good coach. I thought he did a nice job last year. But I also think that 22 wins would be a lot for the Thunder. They're the least talented team in the league. Teams often win under 20
a year. Could you see them winning 27?
Yes, but I wouldn't expect it. Could I see them winning 17? Oh, yeah.
I could see them winning like 15 or maybe less. I
mean, yeah.
It's just, again, I like the players. I think some of these guys are going to be good in a couple of years, but in a couple of years, right? And to me, it's an under fade because it's such a low number. 22.5 is like...
But it's a low number, but it's not crazy low relative to, like...
But I mean, like, for me to bet on a 22.5, I really have to look at this team and go, like, there is literally no talent.
So here's the example. The last full season we played, and this one was a little bit anomalous. The last full season the NBA played was in 2018-19. Yeah. And that year, three teams finished with fewer than 22 wins, and one finished with 22. So that would mean four. Now,
this is before the change on the draft.
But it was so the Knicks, the Suns, the Cavs, and the Bulls, and there was definitely something weighting it down. And then there was a big gap. That was the year that the next tier was kind of strong. The Hawks were a little bit better, and everything else.
Yeah, but both that Knicks and those Cavs teams were worse. I'm trying to think. They were worse. They were worse. Both those teams were worse. Looking at the teams who actually did that, that Suns team was probably the best comp, and Booker wasn't quite as good as Shai is now, right? At the time, and Ayton was like not like Ayton, didn't Ayton get hurt? Ayton got hurt. That was a mess of a team. It was a mess of a team, and that Bulls team was significantly worse than this team.
Yeah, I'm gonna go underplay
that Bulls team was atrocious.
They were real bad. Partially because I think that the strength of those middle class teams, we actually talked about that a fair amount in the East pod, and it'll come up in the West. I think that they'll beat up on the Thunder a little bit. I also think that Thunder, I don't think they're going to win 15, but I think that if they're in the if they're in the very low 20s, that's totally fine. And I think that Presti understands, especially after last year, that being at the absolute bottom is more valuable than for them being number one worst, even if the top three odds are the same, just because it raises your floor. Because last year they fell all the way to six, and we'll see how they feel about Giddey when we get there. So I'm going to go on underplay. I don't feel great about it. This is one that I was really torn about, but I think that that's for me, that's the play.
I mean, it's such a low number that I we're literally 2 years removed from this team making the playoffs. It wasn't, I mean, obviously they,
but I mean, they're, they've lost almost every single player that was on that team, and most of it deliberately.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the way you build teams sometimes, is you get them really young and you try to figure out who is your core moving forward. So this team will progress quickly, but this is not the season where it launches, right? I think this is a season where they're just kind of laying around, which is, I mean, I could see them proving quickly if one of the guys has a break, but it's still such a bad team defensively that I don't feel comfortable doing it. I mean, I think it's a clear under, but I'm just going to fade it. It's just not something I feel comfortable playing. It's just that number is so low.
I know you Giddey, but 30 to 1 for him to win Rookie of the Year.
No. I don't know.
he's not going to get those kind of reps.
No, because like he's not going to get like you've got a bunch of guys in that team that are going to get touches around. They're going to get points, right? So I like Giddey, but like you know, I think Dortz and Poku and Shea are just going to get too many of the touches for him to be a realistic candidate.
I do
like him a lot. But no.
Yeah, I'll need to see more to develop a more fully fleshed out opinion. The Rockets actually started out last year decently well, and they even rebounded after the Harden trade, and then things fell off a cliff, especially once Christian Wood got hurt. They ended the year with the league's fourth worst point differential, the league's worst 17-55 record. They had the differential of a 21-win team over a full 82-game season. And they added Jalen Green, of course, in the draft. They added Daniel Tice, which is interesting because I like Daniel Tice. They, of course, added Şengün and Usman Garuba and Josh Christopher. And this is going to be a spectacularly young team. But so we have it out there. If you want to go over 26 and over, and if you want to go under 27 and under, there's actually a larger range for them than most.
This is going to be a very fun league pass.
Oh, yeah.
This is just like, they just have like guys that are like really appealing. Like there's a bunch of guys on this team that like, the difference between this and the Thunder, we're like looking at the roster and we're like, a bunch of these guys aren't going to be on the NBA in a couple of years. I think a bunch of these guys on the Rockets are going to have long careers.
And the Rockets, like one of the other differences is the depth of their like capable talent. So even if like John Wall and Eric Gordon, one of those guys doesn't end the season on the team or they get the Al Horford treatment, like they've got multiple of those guys. Christian Wood can play. Daniel Tice can play.
Şengün should not have been available to them when they picked him.
Yeah, I mean,
I like what they did with Josh Christopher. Josh Christopher is a guy who fell because he was on a bad situation, but he was also the running mate for Jalen Green. And he's actually, what I've seen of him is that, yeah, no, that dude definitely looks like he has the physical skills to stick in the NBA. Now, how good he's going to be is a question mark because we don't know because the data is kind of worthless, but he was highly regarded coming out, and he does kind of compliment the players that draft.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him not in an Arizona State situation. I thought he looked great the year before. I saw him in a USA training camp in Colorado Springs.
They arguably got the best European player in Şengün and the best European defender in Garuba that they could have
got. And they arguably got the best American player in Jalen Green. I think Cade's better, but like, I mean, would it stun me if Jalen Green ended up being the best player in this draft? No, not at all.
You put that, you put Christian Wood, you put the other person. This is, as I said, this is a team that will be good good or competitive in a few years. I think that, like, and there's potential for them to be really good if all these guys, like shoot up. Now, this year they're more fun and talented than good, right?
And that's great. That's, like, organizationally, that's what they should be. Like, that is, you know, you want teams to have those encouraging signs, but still lose some games because then you can up your talent base for when you are actually good, for when Jalen Green is 3 years into his career and has figured all this stuff out.
Green and Christopher and Garuba and Şengün are all guys that have like very high upside.
Yeah.
And so like if a couple things break, like Garuba is a guy who if he can figure out the offense, he becomes like holy crap, how did they get that guy? He's already defensively, he's gonna be like a really good defender.
And I use the term gravity a fair amount too with the Rockets, and especially with some of their older guys, and that's not just, you know, like Gordon and Wall, but it also could include Jayshon Tate, who is relatively new to the NBA, but Jayshon Tate, this is going to be his age 26 season. So if some of those guys are playing well and there's interest around the league, I don't think Rafael Stone is going to hesitate about trading them unless he thinks they can be a part of the Rockets like 3 years from now, which all those guys, you know, like Jayshon Tate could be. I think they would try to make a John Wall move where a team interested. I just think he makes too much money. So that's going to be difficult. So I'm definitely a fade on this. I think that the Rockets are on term.
I think I'm over in fade on this team.
Yeah, I think I'm under in fade. So I think at full strength talent, I think they're better than this. But generally speaking, teams at about this talent level generally lose a few more games than you'd expect. Not because they're poorly coached or because they don't try hard, but because, you know, they guys get hurt or they're being judicious.
The trick on this team is there's a lot of guys who have skill. And this is where I come back. It's like they have guys that have skill that are useful on a game level, like where somebody has a night and they're gonna be more athletic than a lot of teams. That can, like, sometimes you win because you're just more athletic than the other. And this team has that kind of vibe.
Yeah, and when their five best guys are playing, I think they're viable against a wider swath of the league than a team like the Thunder are.
I could totally see if one of their upside plays hits, winning like 31 games.
But yeah, I could see them winning 20. Absolutely. Like, I could see them winning 20 and feeling good about it too if Jalen Green has some nice play. So I'm under fade. You're over fade.
I think it's going to be fun to watch, but do we want to bet on anything,
Jalen Green at 3.5 to 1. I mean, as much as I appreciate Şengün, he's not going to play enough. That's not the type of guy who wins Rookie of the Year. So Jalen Green at 3.5 to 1, that's not bad. I think that he's going to have the ball in his hands a little bit less than Cade because John Wall's still there, Eric Gordon's still there.
I keep looking at this and I keep thinking Suggs should be much higher on this. And I would rather have Suggs action than I would Green because, again, I don't know that Green is necessarily going to get the rest, right?
I like Green's offensive game better. I agree with you in terms of touches. So yeah, I like Jalen Green. I think he's going to be a very good player. I don't love this number for him specifically. And then the other things that Suggs has going for him in terms of Rookie of the Year is he's a much better defender. And sometimes people care about that, sometimes they don't. It's more of a tiebreaker, but this could be a tie that needs to be broken.
Who's the better? Like, I have my dark horse, but who's the better dunker of those three? Then?
Better dunker?
Yeah, who's the better? Who's going to do the Anthony Edwards put up like some crazy plays?
So Jalen Green, it's more of a speed thing than, I mean, he's got some bounce though. I would say Suggs goes on guys more, but I like Jalen Green as a dunker personally.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, Green has some, again, this team is going to be fun. So maybe 3.5.
I don't think it's terrible, but I wouldn't put money on it. Like, and I really like Jalen Green.
We're both kind of thinking that like 350 is not good enough.
Yeah.
It could be like last year. Somebody like, I have a feeling that it might be like last year. Somebody's going to come out of the field and be like, yeah, this guy's a rookie here. But we'll get to him.
Let's jump to the San Antonio Spurs.
The rookie who's going to have the best jersey of any of the rookies, probably.
Okay, so let's jump to the Spurs. San Antonio last year, they went 33-39. They had the point differential because they underperformed it of a 38-win team in an 82-game season. They lost Rudy Gay. They lost DeMar DeRozan. They got Doug McDermott, and they got Ted Thaddeus Young. I mean, I loved that overall transaction for the Spurs, even though, I mean, I don't even
and
know how
nobody,
much.
And there is no coach in the league who's better than, like, Greg Popovich of beating Spurs.
Right. And part of that is, I mean, I brought this up a little bit. I was talking with, I recorded with Jonathan Sharks and Rob Mahoney on this on their division. And I think it's underappreciated how good San Antonio's defense might be this year. Like, so they were 13th last year playing DeRozan, who they needed offensively, who was a terrible defender.
Yes.
And they have, you know, they have a lot of personnel that makes sense on that end. Pop is one hell of a defensive coach. DeJounte can be a terror. They have, you know, Pirtle's a good rim protector. They brought in Thaddeus Young, who's a good defender, and Firmino can play it all. So, like, yeah, I think I have.
You think San Antonio is better or worse than last week?
I think they're worse, but I don't think they're dramatically worse. And Vegas thinks they're dramatically worse because if you want to,
I think San Antonio is better because of the fact that like the defensive improvement.
Well, I mean, they're going to miss Patty Mills and Rudy Gay, and they're going to miss a lot of those guys. Now they also had very little Derek White last year, and like maybe
I like them in Vassell.
Yeah, Vassell is interesting too, and like so. Yeah, I think they're worse, but they had the differential of a 38 win team last year, and so I forgot to mention, apologies, the over under on it. If you want to go over, it's 29 and up. If you want to go under, it's 30 and below. So for me, this is an overplay.
It's an overplay for both of us.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, San Antonio, like, this seems to be like a 33 to 37 win team, and like
I could totally see Pop throwing a 41, another 50.
Yeah, sure.
I do think that the fact that they were operating under like some defensive liabilities are clear is better. I like the young guys they brought in, and
they're not playing like they're not playing in they're playing like younger guys, but they're not playing rookies. Like that's an interesting and important difference. Like. Primo might get Primo will probably only get into the rotation if things.
If the drop spot for San Antonio figures out a way.
But like Derek White and DeJounte and Poeltl, like those guys are at the point where they, you know, like DeJounte age 25 season, Lonnie Walker age 23, Derek White 27, Keldon Johnson 22. Like those guys can play, and they're not so young that they're still figuring everything out.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Would you say San Antonio will finish with a better record than, let's see, let me give you a comparable. Better record, who else is it? 20. Then, do you think they have a better record than Cleveland?
Yes.
Do you think they have
a I think they're not one of the bottom five. Like, so to me, the likely bottom five is OKC, Houston, Orlando, Detroit, and Cleveland. I think the Spurs are meaningfully better than all of them.
Yes. Do you think they're better than Minnesota?
I think that's closer to a coin flip. I think it depends. Like, each of those teams has...
But Minnesota's getting, like a whole six more wins, man.
Right, which is why this is an overplay for me. Which is why this is an overplay for me, and we'll talk about Minnesota second. San Antonio doesn't have a Rookie of the Year guy. Josh Primo is not going to be that player.
And they're not going to win their division.
Right. While I like the Spurs, they're not going to win their division. So instead, we can move on to the aforementioned Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves had their own version of a season from hell with Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, the personal tragedy and everything else that he dealt with. And just things not working out. And they changed coaches midseason. And I like Chris Finch, but they changed coaches midseason. They were
they're atrocious against the over under historically.
Yeah, they are.
Insanely atrocious. And actually, it's important to note that this is even with, consider the fact that they had Kevin Garnett on the team. So they were good when they had Kevin Garnett against the spread, but like when Kevin Garnett's not been on the team, does not. Yeah.
But so Karl Anthony Towns last year, as much as he had that brutal season, and there was context where there were games he played in where he wasn't 100%, he still played in 50 of 72 games. So it wasn't a circumstance where he played in 20 or something like that. They had a bunch of other injuries, including D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley, and they're still figuring out the rotation, which they are continuing to still figure out. So I mean, they had the differential last year of if we span it to 82 game season, a 26 win team. Vegas is much more optimistic than that, saying they're going to win. It's more of a 34 over under, so 34 and up for the over, 34 and lower for the under. And
did you hear that Anthony Edwards grew 2 inches?
Yes, I did. I mean, good. I mean,
the reason I mentioned that, like, that's like one of the hidden things with like these really young players is once in a while you draft a guy for one role and he grows, and all of a sudden, like Giannis, they drafted and he was like, I believe he was 6'8" went for the draft, and he ended up like
when he also thickened up and everything else, yeah, and so then all of a sudden he can play the five.
Yeah, those 3 inches turned him from like Jaylen Brown to Giannis.
Basically. Well, and the other thing with Edwards, if that, you know, gained the size, and we'll see if there was a corresponding jump in wingspan, is if he can defend threes.
Yes.
If he can defend small forwards, I like Edwards a lot more. Like, I mean,
I already was thinking that he already outplayed what my expectation was of him. Like, but you add extra height on him, and if he gets the length and defense, then yeah, they have it.
And he's strong. Like, I'm interested in Edwards, but at the same point, like, I was just stunned at how high this number was. Like, is there a way that the Wolves win 35 games? Is there a way they win 37? Absolutely. Like, I mean, their offense, they have a lot of offensive talent. They were 25th last year, but Towns missed a bunch of time. Russell missed a bunch of time. Beasley missed a bunch of time. And Edwards had that first half of the year where he was truly terrible. And then he played a lot better, and that's why you use that moving forward, but it was still something...
Darko really likes the overall
team. It does, which is interesting, because I think their defense is going to be abysmal. Like, this team has so few good defenders, and I mean, their best defender, in my opinion, is McDaniels.
No, Pat Beverly.
Oh, yeah, if he actually plays. We'll see how much.
Yeah, they don't trade him.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's Beverly, but I think
they're possible secondary Ben Simmons destination.
Yeah, I mean, they've been interested in him for a long time. I actually did a piece with John Krasinski at The Athletic about that like months ago. Is that they're interested? It's just whether Philly's buying what they're selling, and I don't think they are. Which is the challenge for Minnesota. They just don't have, because I don't think they want to move Edwards. And if it's not Edwards, then who cares?
I'm in a really weird spot with this, because I think I want the over, but I don't want to play. I don't think I want the over, but I'm looking at it and going like, it's Minnesota. I don't know that necessarily like I want to play. Yeah. Right? How do I feel about their coaching for Austin?
I like Finch. I don't love Rosas. I think that he's made a couple bets that I really didn't like. I didn't think Jared Culver was, they moved up for Culver. I didn't think he was a good pick. Edwards, I mean, so Edwards, I'd say he had a better than expected season. He also was the wrong pick at number one because LaMelo is awesome.
Well, except now if they back into the luck of the dude sprouting a few inches and becoming a different player, then
yeah, but they still need that guy. Like, I mean, to me, you draft LaMelo, I mean, and he's the centerpiece.
I didn't think Ant was the wrong pick. I thought, as much as I like LaMelo, I always thought that, like, long-term, I thought the ceiling on both was similar. And maybe I thought the ceiling on Anthony was higher. I just didn't trust it necessarily with, you know, Minnesota's history was going to get there. But I, you know, again, and I love LaMelo. I thought LaMelo was a good pick where he gets picked. But I think there's good reason for them to pick Anthony Edwards where they did. And he kind of showed it as he proved throughout the season. Now, does he continue that? Well, we don't know. But, I mean, this is why I'm kind of on the over on this team. Because I think this team is better than last season. But is it seven games? Well, kind of seven games better, possibly. I mean, Darko thinks it.
I'm under fade. I think there's a possibility they go over this. I think it's a little bit higher line than I would like, but it's still in the reasonable range. So I'm going to go under fade.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go. I'm going to go over fade on this one because again, I think they go over, right? But it's Minnesota, and it's hard for me to like trust them, right? But I do think that there's some really interesting things happening with this team, which is weird because they're the Timberwolves, right? So, like, God, like, you don't expect that. Do we like anything that we don't know? No, we don't like MVP, do they? Do we?
I don't personally know.
And let's see, money line. You know, and for most improved player, if I can get odds, I don't know what the odds are on this. That might be interesting. I might be interested in looking at it later and seeing if that's something that I might kind of, because again, that seems to be kind of a point improvement award. He might actually die. Who goes off and like starts scoring 25-30. We don't know. No, I don't think they can win their division. That's not. Let's keep going.
Yeah, we can keep them. Yeah, the Sacramento Kings. So last year, Sacramento finished 34-41. They had the differential. They actually outperformed their point differential by one of the highest in the league. They had of a 33-win team, but that's over a full 82. That's why they're different. Vegas thinks they're going to be a little bit better this year. The over-under is basically 35 and up if you want to go over, 35 and down if you want to go under. And they didn't really change, as of right now, they didn't really change their personnel too much. They, you know, there were possibilities of, oh, maybe they're going to do something with Harrison Barnes, or they're going to add somebody, maybe they're a Ben Simmons destination. I don't particularly think so. So the question really becomes health, internal improvement. And so last year,
well, I like their top. This is a team that I like their starting five. So I like their top. But then a couple of things. The problem for them is they have a bunch of guys with big question marks because like they're either older or kind of rookies once you get outside of their top five. So I think it's an improving team. It's got a decent core around it, but they're kind of missing some pieces.
Well, and also, Luke Walton, at least to this point, has not done a good job coaching defense for them. He's still the coach there, and their personnel is basically the same. So that's going to be hard. They didn't really upgrade. I mean, getting Davion Mitchell will help a little bit. I mean, I was very impressed by his.
Yeah, and they're not in the Atlantic, but they're in the second toughest conference.
Division. Exactly. Like, the other four teams in this division are much better than them at full strength. The other part of it, challenge for Sacramento, is that the lack of truly the middle class being stronger, I think, hurts them more than almost anybody, because Sacramento, I think of them as a modest floor, low ceiling team. And so that makes it hard for them to win game after game. Like, as the Bulls and the Bulls and the Wizards and the Raptors, like, if those teams are more competitive, then they can't pick up as many in that respect. You know, they have good fans, but
do you think they have any top tier, like, if you were doing it on tiers, do they have any kind of like do they have a 2-1 or even 2-2 on this team?
Like a real like a best player on a good team?
Yes.
I don't think so. I mean, I like De'Aaron Fox, but I think he's a little bit below that at this point. You know, like, I don't love him to create live offense. I like Harrison Barnes, but I think he's more of a 3-4 on a really good team. Rashawn Holmes is like the third to fifth best player on a good team. And they have some depth, but they don't have a ton. And I really like Tyrese Haliburton, but I think that he's more of a complimentary guy. So
yeah, I did a whole analysis. Like, I know that a couple guys were doing an analysis and I helped with that. And so when I did that analysis on tiers, Sacramento has like a fourth, like their best guy is Fox, who's like a fourth tier player.
And they have a lot of guys around that level, which is nice, because
like they have like third guy, like fourth guys, you know, that kind of deal. They don't have any guys on the tippy top tier, right? And that ends up being problematic because functionally, you're good enough. I think they're a good enough to compete team, but they don't have a star or like the second guy either, right? So is there anybody on this team do you think that's like comparable to say somebody like Jaylen Brown?
I don't think so. I think Fox isn't at that level yet.
Or somebody like and nothing like Zach LaVine either, right?
So no. I think there's a chance that Fox is there by the end of the year, but he's not there right now.
So like it's a bunch of guys that are more like say like the RJ Barrett, right? So Knicks fans are gonna get mad at me, but I think Fox is probably better. I think Fox is probably better than him, but like there isn't that. You know, I love Tyrese Haliburton. I think Haliburton's a really nice player, a nice pickup for them. But Haliburton, I think his upside is like the third best guy on the team, right? That's like he's over. Like if everything goes well, he's the guy who's like the guy who comes in and does stuff, right? But not necessarily the guy who's taking over the close games or the guy who's like the kind of the one scorer or the alpha for the game. And I think it's kind of like, I mean, it's not a bad place to be, but like it's not a place where you're saying, oh, this team is going to set the world on fire in the West. That's kind of the point. And they are the fifth best team in the division. Sorry.
So yeah, they are the fifth best team in their division. And like some could point to, it's true, they're defense was meaningfully better when Rashawn Holmes was on the floor than when he was off. Like they, you know, when they had Bagley at center, when they had some of these other combinations, things went very poorly, and they did add a strangely large amount of centers with Tristan Thompson and Alex Len, and for whatever reason they kept Damian Jones, but like, okay, I still don't think their defense is good. I don't think they really resolved it. Their personnel is not at that level, and Davion Mitchell is intriguing, but he's not going to play. I don't think he's going to play enough to really do that, and generally perimeter players aren't as important, and you know, it's just pretty much the same coaching staff, same players, so I think their offense could be okay, but like not great. I mean, they were 11th last year, and I think that's better than I would expect for them this year, just because I think they got a little bit fortunate. They're kudos, I guess, to Walton Fox and all that for that. But it's
I like Quita. I like the center they picked up.
I'm in under fade with them. I'm much more confident in the fade than I am the over or the under because I think this is about the range for them. And if they're a little bit better, then maybe they can jump past the Pels and the Grizz and some of these other teams in this area, and then they get to like 37 or something like that, and they're fine. But
it's weird because I kind of feel like they're just about right.
Yeah, I think this is a very well set line.
Yeah, I mean it's Vegas, of course it's well set. That's what we do. I'm going to join you on the under fade party because it's like it's. I kind of feel like they're going to win like 35-50 games, and I've already picked too many over, so I'm like, just going to go like, yeah, I'm just going to pick under fade because like, yeah, it's not that I don't like. I mean, I like this team, but it's like I'm looking at it and they're just kind of missing a guy.
Yeah,
like obviously if they can somehow pull off the trade for Simmons, which might happen because again we kind of think that like if the you know I think Simmons probably wants to go to the Warriors, but like the Warriors don't have anything to offer to them, so Philly's is going to walk away from it. So there's a chance that he might wind up in like some place like Sacramento, which is honestly maybe Minnesota. And if you did add Simmons, I do think Simmons would really work with this particular roster, right? Because in this particular roster, Simmons might actually play 4-5. Right.
Well, and also like he would help a lot of their defensive issues because he can he's guarded a fair amount of smalls in Philly, but he could guard like wings there, and that would be something he can do.
Him and Hallie kind of like give you a lot more options in terms of defense. I think that actually becomes a lot interesting in terms of how, and then like Harrison Barnes isn't a bad thing. It gets into a decent defense, and then I do think Simmons has upside. Obviously, you know, with Simmons, the question is always is is he ever going to decide to like start taking threes like Giannis does? Even though like because of the gravity motion, but like you know, I think that like that's speculative. So I'm going to go under fade. I'm going to put a note in that like says like I'm going to say we like this team, but like we just
enough.
It's not enough. Yeah. I don't like them at 20-1 to win the division. I don't like them at 30. I don't like
and
them.
Mitchell at 30-1 to win Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's going to get the playing time. And
not on this team. Not on this team. Like unless like there's a disaster that happens. Yeah.
So now we get to the Pels. New Orleans ended last season
very well set line.
Yes, they ended last season 31-41, but they did underperform their differential. They had the point differential over an 82-game season of a 39-win team. They had a very weird offseason where they let Lonzo Ball go via sign-and-trade. They also functionally swapped Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe for Valanciunas, which I really like. They added Satoransky and Temple. They drafted Trey Murphy, who I also like. So, like, and they added Devontae Graham, who's interesting. So,
yeah, I thought Devontae Graham was a really good add.
Yeah, I don't think of Graham as a starting caliber point guard, but I'm not sure that the Pelicans need somebody like that because Zion should have the ball in his hands as much as humanly possible. And B, like, they need guys who can catch and shoot, who can do some of that kind of stuff, and I think that could work well. You know, Graham can do some on ball, but then he can also work off ball. But my concerns here, like, the Pelicans were massively disappointing on defense last year. They finished the season 23rd, and a portion of that was bad shooting luck, and they do have a new coach. Maybe Willie Green will have a different defensive philosophy, and they'll give up fewer
threes. I don't think their defensive personnel got better.
No, I mean, so I thought Valanciunas was better than Adams defensively last year, but not by a dramatic amount. And I think that some of the, like, the defensive metrics were, you know, like, they were Adams wasn't great, but, like, I thought Valanciunas was getting too much credit, yeah, and Adams was getting too much blame.
One of the problems with defensive metrics is defensive metrics are basically, so when, if you're judging a defensive metric on a center, right, I call this the, you could see, a good team for us to see it was when Glenn Davis was playing next to Kevin Garnett, right, and basically Kevin Garnett was carrying Big Baby's ass, and so, like, functionally that rim protector will basically carry a lot of the load, and if he's next to a player who's not that great, then basically he's getting a discount for that player. Another example I can think of is when Tyson Chandler was playing next to Amar'e Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony, and somehow that team was like top five in defense in the NBA, which I still posit is one of, is on the par with, like, the seven Davis of Hercules. Somehow, I don't know how he did that, but he was carrying that entire defense on his own. And the same thing kind of happens. I think some of what you were seeing with Steven Adams is, I think, situation, right? I don't think Steven Adams was like...
I think
the talent around Steven Adams defensively was worse than the talent around Jonas Valanciunas defensively.
I would agree. I like the perimeter guys a lot more for last year's Grizzlies than I do last year's Pelicans. And I think that offensively, New Orleans talent fits together better this year. I think Valanciunas can fill a little bit of a different role offensively. And then, like, Lonzo is a better player to me than Devontae Graham, but in the half court offensively, I think that Devontae is a better fit. I don't know. We'll have to see if Kyra Lewis and Nikhil and some of these other guys can really step up, but I still don't believe...
Do you think the Pelicans are better than the Timberwolves?
Yes.
Better than the Kings?
I do. But yeah. I don't think they're dramatically better, and Vegas does, because their over-under is 38.5 either way, so that means it's 39 and up and 38 and below.
I mean, I know, but that's a good line, because functionally, I mean, they have Zion, right? So...
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good line, because, like, it's... internal improvement just of Zion Williamson could be enough to knock this out. Like, they could have a bottom 10 defense, but have such a good offense that they blow through this number.
I kind of feel like their roster got worse though.
What I've said before is I think they decreased their talent, but they improved their fit. So where those come out in the wash, I'm not sure.
Could you see this team winning 43 games?
I mean, Zion going supernova. That's the way it happens, is that if Zion takes another step forward, remember, we only got point Zion for about, I think it was about half to two-thirds of last season. If we get that for three quarters to the whole damn thing.
I kind of don't even think it's Zion. I kind of think it's somewhat Zion, but you need somebody like Jackson, or somebody from one of their other guys needs to kind of step up for them to, like, kind of get right.
The other thing for me, like, I don't love the Ingram Zion combination. If they moved him for somebody that could shift their identity in almost any way, like a better defender, then you could open up some upside there.
You think they would do Ingram for Simmons?
I don't think Simmons and Zion fit together well. I don't think that really does. Well, I mean, it does Ingram some favors, honestly, because then he gets a better defender around him. I don't think they would. It would be fascinating. Like, that's the type of trade that, like, I wouldn't like from New Orleans' perspective, but maybe David Griffin feeling the heat does. That's interesting. So this is another team. This has happened a couple times in a row now where I'm more confident in the fade than the over-under. I think is an extremely well-set line.
I agree with you. Like, I'm not, there's no way I'm putting money on this team.
Yeah, no way. I'm going to go under, because even though I think there's a chance that Zion is like that he makes a real step forward, and that there were just like, oh my God, why did we think that a 21-year-old version of Zion Williamson wouldn't be there? A, I'm always worried about health stuff with him, and I always will be. B, this team has like kind of weird depth. Like, they have a lot of guys that could work, but I'm not sure they will. And like, if If things go a little bit poorly for them, I could see things, you know, like maybe they fire Griffin or they go, like, they just go, and Willie Green has a rep as being a developmental coach too. Like, he's done some of that with other teams.
Yeah. So, like, I keep coming back to the fact that, like, they lost Lonzo, they lost Steven Adams. And I don't think the talent they brought in is better.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge. And maybe, like, the argument for them going over is also beyond Zion, is internal improvement from other guys. Like,
if you're giving the over, it's all on Zion, really.
If Kyra Lewis and Nikhil Alexander Walker and some of those guys, Josh Hart, if those guys are better, that can help.
Jackson,
but they're still going to be bad defensively. Like, that's the thing. Like, they may have made these fit things that I like, but they didn't solve their problems. Like, other than maybe, like, having more shooting in the half court and maybe a little bit more half court creation, but not dramatically so. So I'm under fade. Now I think we're a year early, but Zion's MVP odds are are 50-1.
Yeah, he's got a top five first. He hasn't top five.
I don't know what the minimum bet you can make, whether it's $5 or $10, but if you could do that, I would do that. Just also because, can you imagine a more gratifying bet if it pays off? Like,
sign at 50-1.
At 50-1, throw $10 on it. If he wins it, you get $500, and maybe even you can hedge it at the All-Star break. I think he might finish top five, top 10 this year. But I mean, 50-1, why the hell not? Yeah.
It does look fun.
I will tell you this also. I would much prefer Zion at 50-1 than Ja Morant at 55-1, as much as I love Ja.
I'm tempted to go underplay on this because there's a lot of chaos on this team. Not a lot of continuity, roster turnover, DM's under fire, kind of possibly. We don't know how safe the...
I mean...
How safe is that coach?
He just got hired. He's fine.
He's fine.
And I mean, Willie Green he's a tabula rasa for me in terms of, like, because he hasn't had the head job before. Like, maybe there's some things that Stan Van did defensively that he cleans up. Like, the analogy for me is, like, I thought that Van Gundy did a very poor job kind of defensively, philosophically coaching to his talent. I thought that the idea that he had, like, oh, let's build off the Bucks is fine, but they didn't have Brook Lopez. So, like, that doesn't work out as well. So maybe what you get is something more similar. So what I've said before is it's kind of like Indiana. So they went from Nate McMillan to Nate Bjorkgren. And they actually, like, the opponents took shots from much better locations, like, better for the Pacers, so much worse for the team. But because teams made more of their shots, and because, you know, they had a little bit of bad luck, the defense was actually worse last year than it was before. Like, I could see the Pelicans giving up shots in better locations, but not really being that much better defensively because their talent just isn't that good.
I'm tempted to go underplay on this team. I'm going to underfade.
Yeah, I'm not going to bet that heavily against Zion. Like, and against this, I mean, if they figure it out, this, like, they can win 40, no problem. Like, I mean, can they win 45? But 40, yeah.
I'm going to do something that might be stupid. I'm going to switch my bet on Minnesota. I'm going to go play on it.
Wow. Okay, so that's fun. And we don't, division or any of that stuff isn't really relevant for the Pelicans.
No, really, basically, I'm going to put a note that basically I am betting on it. I am betting on Walker.
Yeah, and you could say Danny's small bet on Zion, because I just think it's fun. I love him. So let's go.
I'm going to bet on it. Arturo's going to bet on Anthony Edwards.
Interesting.
I am betting on. It's fun. I want to bet on Anthony Edwards. Right. I feel like it's a good thing to do.
Okay. So let's jump to the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies last year finished above 500, 38-34. They ended up making the playoffs after advancing through the play-in. And they had the differential. They were basically even there. They had the differential of a 43-win team on an 82-game season. They lost Valanciunas because they traded him for Steven Adams. They also acquired a bunch of point guards who they immediately sent out. So they basically have the same point guard rotation that they were going to have before. And Vegas thinks they're going to be kind of the same team, maybe a little bit worse. And that's, you know, so it's 41 if you want to go over or under. So 41 and up, 41 and under.
Do you think this is a better or worse team last year?
I think it's a better team. Not because of talent. Like, I mean, I think personally that Valanciunas to Adams is a slight downgrade, but because A, health, Jaren Jackson's going to make a huge difference, having him a much higher proportion of the year. And B, age-related improvement. This is an extremely young team.
Yeah.
And so,
and they added guys who are guys, like Adams is a good add in terms of character. If you're trying to build a defensive character on him, he's a great add.
So the amount of post-prime players on this team is extremely low. Now, like Kyle Anderson, age 28, we don't know if he'll be better than he was last year. But
Slomo's another good, like Slomo and Adams are two good, like,
And like Dylan Brooks might not be better than he was last year. We'll see if he can take another step forward. But Ja and Jaren, who did barely play it, and Bane and Melton and Xavier maybe, Tillman. And like
Brandon Clark can have a bounce back
year. Brandon Clark can have a bounce back year. And I think Taylor Jenkins is a good coach. I think that they, you know, they've outperformed their defensive personnel, like the way I think of it, over the last couple of years. I'm at the point where I think I can give Taylor Jenkins a little bit of benefit of the doubt. So they were 7th last year and 15th the year before. I thought both of those were outperforming the talent they had. So I'm not gonna play the over here, though I am considering it. I think this is more of an over fade, but
this is gonna be a Kumpo, y'all. We were all gonna go up. We're all over on this team. I'm overplaying.
You're overplaying. Like
I think it's easy. They were 43 win team this year. The line set at 40.5. And
yeah,
that's improving. And they had injury, so they had.
And they did have, they did have some bad injury. Ja was mostly healthy. I'm agreeing. You convinced me.
Really well. They played really well in the playoffs too. They acquitted themselves very well.
So, you convinced me. I'm playing it now. Overplay. Yeah.
It's the kind of thing. Like, do you feel? Yeah. It's like, yeah. They're really kind of. Good talent.
Now, I feel a little bit weird about it because while I like the Grizzlies, I don't think they're dramatically I like the teams above them better, and it's always hard to bet the over on a team that you think is like the 7th or 8th best team in their conference, but I think they're good. Like, I think they're going to win like 42, 43 games.
They're the second best team in their division.
That's true. I think the Pels could be better, but I think the Grizzlies are. I think
the Grizzlies have a better, the Grizzlies have a better roster, and they have comparable top talent, and I like the fit and how they play better, right?
Sure.
The Grizzlies have shown me that when the chips are down, the Grizzlies have shown me that they can win these games. So, like, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, I feel a lot more confident about going over on them than going on the Pels, if that makes sense.
And Ja, I just mentioned his MVP odds are too strong. They're too rich for me. I don't like Memphis division. They're not good enough to
You're betting against Jason. Let me put it this way: a bet on the.
Well, so what? So what are there? Tell people what Arturo. What are their division odds?
Division odds are 440, which is actually like a good, really good number. They're cheaper. The consensus is 185, but the actual best number is 440.
So basically, that's like a 1 in 20 chance that they win it, roughly.
Yes, and you're betting against Jason Kidd. That's what you're doing.
And or Luka getting an extended injury.
You're just betting against Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I don't like it's not a that's a number really, that I would consider if I were this even.
Is,
but
this is why that there's a wide variation in that number between books, because I think what's happening is like people are buying like that 440 number. I'm looking at it and going like, I'm betting against Jason Kidd. I'm betting Jason Kidd. The Jason Kidd run team is going to be disappointing and disaster. I kind of like that division. But like, I think Memphis at 440 for division actually. I could totally see them like giving Dallas a scare, because again, like the downgrade from like going from Rick Carlisle to Jason Kidd is like that is a massive downgrade. So I really like that 440. That's an interesting one. I'm gonna say I'm gonna bet. I like division like +40 to win the division is really cool. I like it.
Okay, so let's jump to the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers last year, they ended up with a 42-30 record. They had the differential of over an 82-game season of a 47-win team. There is obviously uncertainty around the franchise. Terry Stotts is gone. Chauncey Billups is in. We don't know how long Damian Lillard is going to be there, or CJ or something else. Over-under is at 44 either way, so 44 and up for over, 44 and down for under. And I think this is a really, personally, I think this is a really well set line, because the Blazers, like, at full strength, I think they're better than this. Like, I brought up that the win total for last year, and Lillard played a bunch, but CJ missed a lot of time, and he played, I mean, he was great at the beginning of the season, he was pretty good after that. Nurkic missed a bunch of time. So I think they're better than this. Like, I think the Blazers, they're a 48, 47 win team to be.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the most important thing.
Okay.
No Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, their bench defense is going to be a lot better because not only is Melo gone, but Enes Kanter is as well. And
they
were so
they basically played half the time with Carmelo and half the time without Carmelo. And they were 6 points better
for the game. And they functionally swapped Larry. They swapped Derek Jones Jr. for Larry Nance, which I really like.
This is a significantly better team. Like the roster.
Well, okay. So I'm talking. I'm starting to talk myself into play. Not only because of that, but because of like the Clippers being hurt and there are some wins here.
When the lines came out, I said this is the easiest over on the board.
Okay. Yeah. I'm working. I know you were more confident in it. I'm getting to overplay as well.
But I mean, like it comes down to this. They had Carmelo Anthony was part. Like Carmelo Anthony really is not an NBA player anymore. Right. He might be good, but he's really not. He's not at that level. He's really the worst regular player in the league at this point because, I mean, he's ancient by NBA. And he was a regular part of the rotation. He played half their minutes. And if you look at their minutes with and without, I mean, like, this is why they lost Denver, because they played Carmelo half the time. Well, and every time they would play Carmelo, like, Denver would go on a run. I don't know why they were married to it, but, like, they were married to it. And, like, simply not having him on the team...
Well, so they're
pieces just makes the edges better, and I think there's like, you know, they won 48 games last year, the equivalent, and you're setting the line at 43.5. Do I think this team is 5-2? Like, yes, I think this team is better than it was last year. I think last year they're overrated. This year they're massively underrated because people don't understand that like when players get old, like Carmelo does, particularly when he can't play defense and never could.
Well, I think to me, bigger than that is. I think that Billups can try some more stuff defensively. They have better defensive talent because they added Larry Nance, and Derek Jones didn't really play. Larry Nance will, so that's going to help out. He'll solve some of their backup big minutes. I really like that fit for them.
Yeah, I don't think they downgraded a coach, other than the personnel issues there.
Well, and here's the other strong argument for me. Now, you could argue that last year was a little bit different than some overall, but last year... The team that had the of the top 10 offenses, the team that had the worst point differential was the Celtics. And the Celtics still had the differential of a 45 win team. And Blazers the Blazers now 2 years ago, it was worse for them, but their defense was visible. Their offense was a little less stupendous. The argument against their over would probably be that they trade Lillard, but I don't think it's happening preseason, and in season, I think they're going to be okay. So then are they really going to make a move? Maybe they do in the offseason. Maybe he actually puts in a demand, but if they're in the playoff mix, I don't think he will.
I think that they're going to be in the fight for the one seed in the West, right? Because I think
that's stronger than me. I think they're more like a 47 to 50 win team.
No, I think they're going to be like 51, 52 because again, it's just a better working role. And they also didn't they not have Nurkic for like a long part of
but he misses time all the time. I mean, like, so Nurkic, yeah, like, Nurkic played 37 last year, and so that meant that Kanter had to start, which was different.
So they got, like, their big man rotation now is like Nurkic, Covington, and Nance. That's pretty nice. Yeah. I mean, like, Kanter, I mean, they don't have Kanter anymore. It's like their defense, like, so no Kanter.
And they'll have a full season of Norm Powell, though I thought.
Like,
you know,
they
Gary
no Panther and no Carmelo Anthony. Their defense is going to be wildly better.
And Zeller at backup center. Like, Zeller is a better backup center for them than Enes Kanter was, personally.
And, like, it also lets you cover for Damian.
I mean, he doesn't play it, so maybe we shouldn't say it. But
I mean, like, all I'm gonna say is, like, I think that this team is gonna be like they were saying that last year for this team, but this is a better version of that roster without the obvious kind of flaws. And I think that, like, if they have good health, they're gonna be up there for kind of the one seed. I mean, it depends on exactly where it's gonna be, right? So, like, we don't know if it's gonna be kind of 55 or something, but I think they can probably get to 53 wins. And they were in the chase with the flaws in the roster, so I do think that they can be in that chase. So to me, it's overplay. It's fairly easy. So, okay. Do we like their MVP or divisions? Southwest against No, Northwest against Denver. Ooh, 10-1 is actually really nice. I actually do think I like their division odds. I don't love their.
See, I'm not as high on their division odds just because I think the teams above, like somebody above them is going to have a better year.
No, Portland, Northwest. So basically, it's Denver or the Jazz.
Oh, that's right. They're not in the Pacific. That was my brain went the wrong way.
Yeah,
but Utah, like I think of Utah as a very high floor team. We'll get to them.
The thing is, it's 10-1 though.
Yeah, I'm not there. You can be there. I mean, you're higher on them in general.
I mean, I think division 10-1 is actually really interesting for them, and I think like the Dame's MVP odds are actually interesting. So Dame right now is going off at like 1600. So I think Dame 16-1 is actually a really interesting bet because I do think that if they're in that one seed conversation, then this could be the year for Dame, right? So I'm going to say that like. I'm going to say division at 10-1 and Dame at 16-1 are both really interesting. It's just given the roster has improved, he's going to score a lot of points. He's going to be the high usage machine. He has the clearest usage and the clearest he's a clear number one team on a team that could be contending for the one seed in the West. So it means to me that 16-1 is too low. And he's already finished in top five multiple times. So he's a guy who could definitely win the end. If he's gonna win it, it would be probably this year. So I want to say I'm gonna go overplay. What do you got?
I'm gonna go overplay as well, but I like the other stuff. I'm closer to the margin than you are, but I'm still there. So now we get to
number. It's just, because it's like 43.5. You're looking at this.
It's lower than I thought it would be.
I could see them winning 10 more games than that. And it wouldn't. I mean, it would be a little bit surprising, but it would be stunning. Right? So there are scenarios where like the teams in front of them fall and they win 53 games.
Now we get to the Clippers. And the Clippers are tough because Kawhi Leonard is going to be out some period of time. We don't know exactly how long. It could be the whole regular season. It could be less than that with his partially torn ACL. The Clippers were the second best team in terms of differential in the regular season. Oh, no, that was 2 years ago. They were second best last year. That's right. God, this feels like so long ago. And they underperformed their differential as a lot of teams that high do, like the Jazz did as well, because when you have that kind of differential, you're not going to win as many games. They were top 10 on offense and defense, but now they're missing their best player for a lot of the season.
Maybe the whole season.
But Vegas really counted that in because their over-under line is basically 45 and up for over, 45 and down for under, and that makes this a challenging play for me.
I think part of the problem is for this team is I think that there's a defensive effect that's not necessarily measured in the projection. So losing some of these key players has made the defensive personnel kind of worse, right? So you're going to basically get guys who weren't in those rotations kind of have to come up and guard a better offensive.
But they have defensive talent. I mean, like, we don't know what
they do. It's just I think it's just like the next man up kind of problem, right?
Yeah, so yeah. Like, and it's like, I like to think of it as cascading injury. So that also means that any subsequent thing, if Marcus Morris or Batum or somebody else goes down, then they're going to need to be leaning on maybe Justice Winslow.
They're historically the most under the LA teams.
Yeah, but they're this is different. I think Ty Lue's a good coach. I'm more concerned about the non-Kawhi Clippers offensively than defensively. I think that they have talented players, but they don't really have a great straw that stirs the drink. And it's been a long time. Like, I had Paul George before he got hurt that season. I think I had him third in MVP, but he was doing it in a kind of a different way, playing next to Russ. And you know, I like Reggie Jackson. I thought that he had a nice standard. So I'm worried that they're going to slide back further, and getting Eric Bledsoe doesn't help in that respect. He had a brutal year in New Orleans. So I think that the Clippers go over this. Like, it's they have a lot of talent. Like, I mean, Paul George is still on this team. They have defenders. They have a good coach. They're, you know, they can still put out capable rosters, you know. So like, if their starting five is Jackson, like, I don't know if it's going to be Jackson, George, Batum, Morris, and Zubats, something like that. Like, that's a capable lineup. Like, that's better than those middle teams in the East. Like, you know, that's better than the Bulls. I think that's
better than Memphis.
I think they're in the same ballpark.
Yeah, which means that we think they're that's the thing. I think they're more like Memphis, where I think Memphis is too low. I think they're probably a bit too high. So I'm leaning towards under, but it's just a smidge. I'm like 45 wins is what
I'm over fade. And part of it is like if they get Kawhi back, even if it's part time, I think that he'll really make things easier for them. And the other thing that the Clippers have that I like beyond I mentioned the coach is they have a decent amount of functional depth. You know, like I don't love Bledsoe, but if Bledsoe's not playing well, they can give Terrence Mann more minutes. If he's not playing well, then maybe they can try Justice Winslow, and they don't even have to get into like the rookies, Keon Johnson, Preston, BJ Boston. Like, I don't think those guys are going to play very much. And then the other huge argument for the Clippers is, well, I don't think they're the most desirable buyout destination. If it looks like Kawhi is coming back, I think they can get somebody. And also Steve Ballmer is always willing to spend. So like, if I were to guess just purely on talent, not on health, were they to get better or worse from now to the end of the season, I would guess that they would get better.
Yeah, I mean, I see it. This is why
I think they stay the same, but yeah.
This is why I'm not going underplay. That's some kind of going like...
I think we see them similarly. I would not... I mean, division odds for them...
No.
Well, okay, but here's the juicy one.
MVP, is it? You're going to put out the MVP.
Championship.
But do we think Kawhi is really going to be back?
I think he might... Like, so... the number that was in my head for the Clippers to consider it was 15 to 1. That was the number for me that if it was 15 to 1 or richer, I would consider it. And it's 16 to 1.
Well, it's 25 to 1.
Yeah. Oh, so if it's 25, yeah, I wouldn't throw a lot on it. This is more like a Zion MVP vote. Okay. But like, I was seeing it at 16. It's 25.
Yeah.
Wow, to win the title.
I mean, depends. You got to shop around, but yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't throw a lot on it, but I'd throw a little bit. And for MVP, I mean, Paul George is at 40 to 1. I don't think he's going to have the volume. I mean, I don't think the Clippers are going to be good enough. Like, if they're a top three team, maybe he can do it, but.
I don't love it. I think that, like, if we get better news on, like, see, the thing about that 25 to 1 is you might get a better number for it later in the year. If, like, depending on the news.
You might, but I worry that it could, like, if they're a little bit better at the start of the year or we get any positive, I would be okay with it at 25. Now, I wouldn't have gotten it at 16. I would have said, like, wait and see if it gets better. But 25, I think it might not get that much better than that. Maybe it gets to 28 or something. But if it gets to, like, 30, then that probably means that something bad happened and I wouldn't be as interested in it.
Yeah.
And again, I'm talking a small number, like not a big bet or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I have no issue with that. And then we don't like...
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's not horrendous. Like, if you're a George optimist, like, it'd be kind of a fun one. But no, if I were, like, in that same ballpark, I would rather bet on Zion or bet on... Oh, don't touch Kawhi for MVP. He's not going to play enough. Like, there's no chance. So let's get to the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets last year, they went 47-25. They had the differential over an 82-game season of
And this is important. They did not have full home court advantage.
They did not. I mean, they did have they were playing at altitude, but they didn't have the fans, which I think of the fans as a smaller part than the altitude for them.
The altitude is a bigger deal. Yes.
And so they had the differential of a 54-win team last year. I think that, and so, but
this,
they had
this line is set very well.
Oh, it's set really well. I mean, so last year, you know, they played Jamal Murray played roughly half the season. I think he's going to play a little bit less than half the season, but they also got Aaron Gordon midway through, and the line is set at 47.5 either way. So that's 48 and up or 47 and down. This is a really good line. I'm definitely a fade. I'm genuinely torn on whether to go over or under.
They're a really good team on over because of the home court, and that's going to be back, and that's going to be a thing, particularly with COVID, because reduced lung capacity is going to be a thing for some players, and you throw that into playing at altitude, it's going to be a real problem. Some guys are just going to die on a back max, and not literally die, just like being figurative. In that altitude, it's just going to be like rough. Who's their second best guard? Who do you think is the best guard on Denver?
Best healthy guard, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, so they're very front court heavy. I would say
it might be the guy I kind of think is my dark horse for rookie of the year.
Oh, I don't think Bones is going to play enough.
I think Bones is really interesting, and Bones. We'll talk about it. I think Bones is a guy who could definitely get, like, I think there's a shot he gets the starter job before Murray gets back, because there isn't really a better guard. Like, there isn't better. There's
like better I think Barton's going to take a lot of that.
Yeah, but is Barton your shooting shooting guard? Or
yeah. You're thinking Bones starts over Monte at the one and Campazzo. It's possible. I think he'll have
Monte Campazzo and like Austin Rivers. I'm like, I like Highland better than all the those three players. And I would rather if there's something there, I would rather develop it because I do think that kid has a lot of potential. Right?
He does.
I would if he shows up and he's actually a competent starter. Then he could definitely get the volume because he does have the offensive shots, which is, I think, one of the, I think, like, the odds on him are, like, 100. So it's, like that's a fun bet. Yeah, 100 to 1.
Yeah, that's
my favorite rookie of the year in Nuggets bet. And he also has the best jersey, Nuggets, Denver Highlands, great. Best jersey. And he's also Dita. He's great.
I'm not as high on Highland of rookie of the year just because the other guys are going to get a lot of time. And even if
it's 100 to 1, that's why I like it. It's 100 to 1.
But let's get back to the crux
getting
of it with their
team,
their over under. So 48, it's so good. And Jokic, the other part of this is Jokic is a damn Iron Man. Like, so he's going to play. You don't have the same worries with him. Porter,
I mean, your argument for the over is that, you know, Murray gets back, they get a little better play from the
well, the I think the argument guy. Is that they're like a
and
let's say
a
40
from you get a lead from I'm blanking on his name right now. Michael Porter Jr. So if you get a lead from Michael Porter Jr. And you know you integrate, you have the full season of Aaron Gordon, and you get something from the other guys there. Then yeah, I mean the problem is they do have some, like, you know, I love Jeff Green, I love Austin. So it's a bit dangerous. I don't think. I mean, obviously without Murray, they're not as good as they were last year, right? There's a shot for this. Their division is. I do think. I think the problem is. I think I would probably rate Portland over them. Right? That's my thing. I think Portland is a better team than they. And again, this is not a full strength judgment. This is Portland right now is a better team than Denver is going to be for the season until they get Murray, right? When they get Murray back, it's a different story, but I don't know if you're going to get Murray back at 100% when he comes back. So I'm kind of under on this team, which is bad because, like, generally they're a team that goes over, but I'm kind of under on this team.
I mean, I'm really torn on it. I'm pulling up one stat that might end up being not definitive, but pretty instructive for me. So when Jokic was on the floor and Jamal Murray was off, and that includes stuff from before Jamal got hurt, but they played together, you know, a fair portion of their time. They still were a positive team. They had plus 1.4 differential. So that's plus 1.4, that's really like about a 44-45 win team. And they weren't great on defense, but they were still, you know, like 117 offensive.
You have to look at it when Aaron Gordon was there.
Yeah, I mean, well, so if you add in AG, if you want to do that, so then that narrows it much more cleanly to when Jamal Murray was hurt. Plus 6 net rating, 91st in offense. So I'm going to go over fade. I think that they're a 50 plus win team when Jamal Murray is available. I think that Jokic is going to play a lot because he's that. And so I don't love it. Like I think they're going to be in the 46 to 50 range, but I think there's a little bit more on one side than the other. So I'm going to go over fade.
Yeah, I think they're going to finish third in the division, right? That's my thing. And
okay, what about Jokic MVP or the repeat? It's 16 to 1.
No.
I think he could do it. I think that's a fair number for him, but I don't love it.
Would you rather bet that or the division odds?
What are their division odds?
I think the division odds probably like 5 to 1. Yeah, 4 to 1. 4 to 1 are the division odds.
I'd rather have Jokic MVP. I think the Jazz are going to have a good regular season. We'll get to that.
Player is 16 to 1. So 16 to 1. I don't think it's one of my best
MVP bets.
I think he has to walk on water to win the MVP this year.
I don't think he does. I think he just has to be slightly healthy. But I mean, if the Nuggets, if Jamal Murray misses a vast majority of the season and they're a top two or top three team, then I think he's going to have a reasonably strong case.
Here's the other
argument in favor of Jokic that I think could be really persuasive. I think there is a possibility that the Nuggets are basically be him and Embiid. That they're the two players who have the best teams that they're not splitting votes. Like, and maybe Giannis, depending on where the Bucks end up.
Dame.
I mean, if you think the Blazers are going to be better. So, like, yeah, I mean, that's, it's a,
MVP could come down to who finishes first between those two games.
It could. But so that's why 16-1 is fine. It's not amazing.
I think you're talking 16-1 is fine. I like it. Yeah. Too. We both.
And if you're like, if you're a Jokic, I would rather bet they're over than that.
There's a reason why I like Jokic at 16-1, and it has to do with I think the guy who's the favorite I think is overrated, and it's not because of him. I think it's because of his team. But
sure, we'll get to that soon enough. But before that, let's get to the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have had a weird couple years. They had the differential of a 42, basically a 500 team last year, but they were also playing without Klay Thompson. They had the fifth offense and the 21st ranked defense, partially because, yet again, they were horrendous when Steph Curry was off the floor. And Vegas...
Well, they were horrendous when James Wiseman was...
Also true.
Let's be appropriate. I think when they... For some reason, strategically, I don't understand. They Curry insists on doing these really dumb things sometimes. Some of these players.
Well, it also might be partially front office. Like there are a couple things it could be. But so the Warriors, Vegas is treating them. You used the term before as a public team. I think Vegas is treating them as a public team. The over under is at 47.5 either way, so 48 and up, and then 47 and down if you're going under. And
I think the LeBron rule is going to apply here. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, I mean, could the Warriors finish with 48 or more wins? Yes, absolutely. They could.
I mean,
defensively, they have a lot of talent. Offensively, they can figure some stuff out.
They're playing too many rookies. They're still going to play.
Well, I don't know how much they're going to play their rookies, but the problem is like one of the big problems for the Warriors has been backup point guard, and yet again, they did absolutely nothing to solve it. So the non-Curry minutes are going to be a disaster offensively yet again. I think their defensive talent is going to be good again. And like Klay, as talented as he is, he doesn't solve the non-Curry minute problem because A, they're going to keep those guys together a lot.
How old is Klay again?
Klay.
Going off on Achilles? I have some real concerns about like Klay ever being Klay again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's reason. I mean, and I think he's going to be more
and
of
there's
a.
There's a lot of pressure, a lot riding on him being himself again. I think that if the team had done, if the team had drafted LaMelo again, I would be better. This would be a better team. And maybe they go to the finals last year. But they also kind of like don't have to have Klay moving around on the ball as much as they're going to. Like, they really should have drafted somebody who could move the ball around effectively, because that means when Klay comes back after that injury, he doesn't have to do that much movement around on offense. He can just sit there and shoot, which is catch and shoot, and then like.
Well, I think Klay will step back into his same offensive role. It's just, can they find him?
And yeah, what I'm saying is like I don't know if he physically can hold up on that after the kind of injuries he's had at his age. So there's some real question marks for me on this roster. Plus the fact that they have like some real holes and some real opportunities for her to do some really bad things on offense on this particular team. And really, this roster doesn't make too much sense. Like, I think that this is a situation where they're going to waste another year of Curry's prime. Like, really, last year, like, I was annoyed because really, if they gone slightly left on their decisions last year, I really think they could have gone to the finals last year. Because if they didn't have the two holes that they had, they just draft LaMelo and then get a big, right? Instead of, like, doing what you did and get Kelly Oubre. You could have gotten, like, Gasol or somebody. And you would have been in a much better position to actually contend. And I think that this, again, seems to me like the exact same situation where they didn't fix the issues that they had. And they're basically carrying over the same problems where, like, they have players on the roster that can't play. And they don't have a lot of options other than relying on some older players that are hurt, right? And really just wanting Curry to just do everything, but that's not going to work once you get to the top level, because, like, teams can now basically deny him by just focusing on him because they don't have any other opponents. So, I mean, unless they make a trade, which, you know, I know they're trying to get Simmons, mostly that's a scuttlebutt, but, like, again, the problem is, like, because they haven't fixed the roster, the holes in the roster, nobody wants the players that they have. Like they, the problem for them is, like, what they can't offer anything that Philly would want because they don't have it on the roster.
Well, right? their money is tied up in play. I mean, Wiggins, even though he has improved, he's still not the critical selling piece. And then the other guys, I mean, that's the other...
Wiggins is basically Harrison Barnes 2.0. That's what he is.
Yeah, he's, like, I mean, similar, he's stepped
better
up.
For you, but he's not going to be, like, he's not going to be good anywhere.
Right,
like,
and he's paid a lot of money, and that makes it a big problem. Like, there isn't surplus value there. So
I'd be fine with Wiggins at the MLE on certain teams, but like
I think he's a starter. I just don't think he's a heavily above average. or anything.
I mean, we kind of. I'd rather have him be like kind of a guy coming off the bench and doing things. I think like better teams are not going to have him. I mean, there are teams that would have him started, but I don't necessarily think that.
I mean, Wiggins last year, I thought he played better defensively. He had basically 57% true shooting. Like on the wing, you're going to find better players than that. Obviously, that's why I'm not saying he's a top five or top 10 player at his position. But there aren't 30.
Yeah, Costco, what do you get? Okay, I mean that's and again, it's just like at one point he was the worst. He was the worst player for the 19, 20, 21, 22 in the history of the league. Now he's a reasonable kind of six marginal starter, and that's fine. But he doesn't command that play. And I think part of that is the fact that he's playing on a roster with Steph Curry. That kind of helps, right? But I do think that when you have generational offensive talent, you have to put players around them that can take advantage of it. And the Warriors have done a really bad job of that. And it's a pity because I do think that he had an incredible season last year and just ill-served by the roster. And I'm concerned that he's going to have the same season and he's going to be ill-served by the roster. With all that said, I am an underplay on this team.
I'm an underfade. I think that there is a way that they could do it. I think Steph is an incredible offensive player. But it's going to be a challenge. And a part of how they would do it is playing their young guys less. And whether they can, and I think there might be some.
So who's their best five then? Like
Looney.
What is their? Okay, tell me what's their best five?
Oh, the best five man lineup. So we'll assume Clay is back. So it's Steph, Clay, Draymond, Wiggins, and then either probably Looney or Iguodala, depending on how Andre looks. But maybe it's Porter or Bielitsa.
I mean, I like some of the guys that they're at it, but still, this is like. They're going to play Wiseman, right? They're going to try.
I'm not as sure that they will this year. I mean, last year when it was like kind of a weird gap year and they weren't going to be that good anyway. This year, like as soon as Clay comes back, there's going to be a lot more immediate pressure. Like I think that the organizational stuff is going to shift a little bit.
We're both under. I said pull over. It's like the Warriors automatically my finger weapon. No, it's under.
Yeah.
And are they better than the Clippers this year?
I think they're in the same ballpark. I think that the Clippers are probably a little bit better because I think Clay's going to be limited. Like I think if we were to say 100% Clay and then Kawhi only plays a fifth of the year or less, then I would probably say the Warriors. But we don't know what Clay we're getting, so I'm going to go. I think the Clippers are a little bit better. But you look at some of the non-Wiseman stats for last year's Warriors. Like I think there is potentially
I literally have to throw out all the Wiseman stats for playoff ball. Just ignore them. They're just they're complete garbage. They're just ignore those stats. Those stats are
He'll be better presumably, but still. I mean
we kind of think we don't. The problem is I think the problem for him is he's in the worst possible situation he could be in terms of development because he would be much better off being on a garbage team where they could really kind of work on the reps. Better off on OKC where he just work on the reps and actually get better in a few years. Or Ayton where DeAndre Ayton was on a bad Suns team and he was able to get the reps to actually get to now he's a really good player. And I know they were comparing there's some comparison with him with Ayton and Wiseman, but I don't think Wiseman's going to get the same kind of reps or going to have the same opportunity to be bad anymore. I mean the problem is that you have these generational guys on this team that really kind of want to win now. So a guy like Wiseman, who's a project, is going to get buried. Or if you play him, he's going to be a liability, right? And maybe that changes, but I don't necessarily see that. That's not something I'm willing to bet on, right? Do you like their division or title odds or anything?
The one that would be most interesting to me with them is Steph MVP at 9-1. That's I don't think he's going to get it. I thought that last year was his best chance at this phase of his career, even though the Warriors will be better this year than they were last year.
How many games would they have to win for you to think that's reasonable? I mean, they would have to win, 52, 53?
I think, if they won, 48, I think that there would be some buzz.
But I'm talking about. I think he has.
They probably have to win 51 for him to get a real shot.
I think they're probably going to have. They would have to win the division for me. I think, or come close to winning their division for them to do it. And I don't. I don't think that this is a better roster than it was last year on paper, right? With the holes that they still have in place. Can he hold it to that pace? I think that they're, there are a few wins better, but it's still a roster that doesn't make sense to me, so I don't love it. If you like, do you like the Curry for MVP?
I don't like it. I think I would consider it, but no, I don't. It's not one of my favorites on the board. No.
Okay, so let's move on.
Yeah, and Dallas. The Mavericks. So last year, Dallas finished 42-30. They had over an 82 game, the differential of a 47 win team. They largely kept things pretty stable in terms of their personnel. They functionally swapped Josh Richardson for Reggie Bullock, added Sterling Brown, and also importantly changed their coach. Vegas thinks they're going to be about the same level of team, and maybe they can be a little bit healthier. Kristaps Porzingis missed a fair amount of time last year. I think he missed about half, a little less than half the season. Powell missed some time, but they were, I mean, modestly healthy overall. And they swapped their coach, and they downgraded. We'll see what Jason Kidd is, but I mean, Carlisle is one of the better coaches in the league, and last time he coached, I had Jason Kidd as the worst coach in the league. So for their
it might have,
we've seen a few coaches that I was down on get better. Like, I mean, Monty Williams, I didn't think he did a great job in New Orleans, and he did a much better job on Phoenix last year. But Kidd, I mean, we'll see. But so the argument in favor of them going over 48.5, it's 48.5 either way, is Luka going another level here. I mean, and Dallas was already, they were the eighth best offense last year, but I think they were way better than that in Luka's minutes. And it's possible. I mean, I think Luka will be better this year than he was last year, but better enough.
Which is more likely? They win 50 games or 52 games and like pretend for the one seed, or they're a garbage fire and win 41 games?
Oh, I don't think, I think they'll win more than 41. I mean, I think they have better talent than that.
43 games.
43, then we're starting to get into the range. Like 52, because like you think about how well this team has to play.
Yeah, I'm going off.
Well, but I mean, here's the argument in favor of that. They had the differential of a 53 win team 2 years ago. Like they, and Porzingis played a little bit more, and they, you know, that was the team that didn't force any turnovers, any of that type of stuff. So I think there's an argument.
They had better pieces on the bench last year. It's like it was more interesting the year that year. I'm very down. I'm thinking that like that downgrade is going to be significant. Carlisle got a lot of this roster, and this is really, I mean, they got Luka, but everything after that is kind of not great. I don't.
Well, and the other big,
I mean, I like THJ, but THJ is kind of a nice complimentary piece.
The other big concern for me with Dallas in terms of this over under is that they do not have that many like pre-prime players or really young guys that you expect to take a step up. Like, yeah, maybe Josh Green can be better, but Josh Green barely played. I don't think he's going to play that much this year. Like,
if Luka's out, this team is a disaster.
Yeah, but not only that, the only guys in their rotation who are 25 or younger are Jalen Brunson and Luka. Like, Porzingis is already 26, Finney Smith and Hardaway Jr. and Kleba, like, all those guys are older. And so it's not like there's this internal improvement from anybody other than Luka, and he's already incredible. So could he get better? Yes, obviously he could. But could they have worse injury luck? Could they have a player, you know, have one of their role players? Like, I thought Hardaway had a nice push towards the end of the year. Could some of those guys shoot a little bit worse? You know,
One of the reasons I liked Luka when he was coming into the pros was he was already he already had the reps at the pro level, right? So a lot of these guys were coming in from Europe or basically playing at the highest level, including EuroLeague, and already have the rep minutes that get them to that experience that gets them to that level in terms of competitiveness. So you're getting a guy who's coming in and you're going to get like closer to the tippy top version of himself for a longer period of his prime. But the caveat to that is that the ceiling is somewhat lower on these guys because I don't think that like that experience. So he isn't necessarily picking up experience at the rate of somebody who basically came from playing in the Big Ten tournament, right? So, you know, he's playing like against like philosophy majors in the Big Ten tournament, and like now he's playing on at this like tippy top level versus a guy who's been playing like either pro league or Luka was guarding Russell Westbrook when he was 16, right? In an actual game environment, and I think that means to me that I think my expectation on his improvement, I think he's still going to improve somewhat, right? But I think his improvement is going to be marginally less than some. Like, I think Carl Anthony Towns is somebody who's similar. His top level improvement is going to be less because he's already got like all this like you know, he's got 10 years of like top level, either international or pro experience, right? So at this point, you know, you're going to see improvement, but it's going to be marginal on the edges, right? I think what we saw in the playoffs is probably the tippy top version of himself, right? Maybe, you know,
I think he could still get better. I mean,
I think like my expectation on him, I don't expect him to like take a like a quantum leap like I would somebody who's like 20 or 21 and has played like a year at pro level ball. Versus someone like, hey, he's been playing international ball forever, and he's been playing like pro ball forever too. So it's a little less room to grow in terms of experience. That's my take. So
I think that's partially fair. I also think, even though Reggie Bullock hasn't necessarily overall been better than Josh Richardson, I think that he'll be better for Dallas because he can shoot more reliably and he can defend all right. And Richardson also had a really challenging year, including COVID at one point for the Mavs. So I'm under fade. I think that there's a chance that they, like, there's a pathway for them to go over if Luka's really good, and he's been pretty damn durable. But I considered play, and I'm guessing you're going to be under play.
Yeah, I'm under play. I'm 100%. I was looking forward to betting against Jason Kidd, and I have been looking forward to betting against Jason Kidd since basically he was announced as the coach of the Mavericks. I just feel like he's going to find a way to get me there, just because he is not a good coach. And I think this situation is combustible enough that I really don't get it. I mean, he's not a guy with a track record of success. And really the teams that got rid of him actually got better. And really kind of it's a guy who also kind of like, you know, puts, you know, makes these situations kind of weird. So, you already have like discontent with how Porzingis is basically kind of going. So like you're throwing another flame along from there. We already know that this front office has had some issues before. You know, the whole thing with Harold Bob, the whole thing before with harassment. So it's, you know, let's introduce a really kind of combustible element to this mix. So yeah, no, I'm comfortable. There's a lot of like smoke that I'm like, eh, I don't like it. And even Carlisle was a really good coach. He got a lot out of his players and got the most out of it. And I think this is going to be a downgrade from what they were. And again, if this is a very fragile team, if Luka misses any time, they're losing this game.
Oh yeah. Let's go through some of their other odds. Luka at 4.4-1 for MVP. I think that's
hate it.
I don't hate it. I think that he could be the best player, but I would rather if this were like 6, 7, or 8. Like I would feel better about it there.
The problem is like I don't think his team is going to be like competitive enough because of, like again, Jason Kidd is his coach, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I think they could have the best offense. I would say was that 2 or 3 years ago he was the most valuable offensive player in the league. Like if he does that again, then you're in the mix at bare minimum. Division odds.
Dude, I don't like it at all. Like it's like negative money. It's like, ooh, jeez.
But what is it? Just so I'm trying
minus,
to play.
Minus 150. So basically you bet 150 to win 100.
Oof. And I mean this division has Memphis and New Orleans, I think that Dallas is going to finish better than them, but like why waste your money with that? Like sure enough thing.
I could totally see Memphis like basically like fighting with Dallas to the last day for that division. Yeah. Because I think the Memphis is exactly the opposite of the Dallas situation in that I trust that coaching staff and I like kind of the roster across the board. I think obviously Memphis and like Dallas has a better top level player, but other than the top level player, and I think Ja is good. I mean he's not Luka, but Ja is good. But the rest of these guys across the board, I much prefer the roster that like Memphis has and like coaching has, the front office that Memphis has to the mess of Dallas. So I mean I'm comfortable going that like. Can I get like, and again, I'm going to have to check these out. I'm seeing that 440. I'm going to check out the real number. But like, yeah, I definitely enjoy the idea of betting on Memphis. And I think that's a good bet. Because I think like Dallas, like people are not accounting for how bad of a mess the situation in both Milwaukee and Brooklyn was with Locke, right? And oh boy. Honestly and truly, I mean, there's 30 jobs in the NBA, right? And when you have a guy with this track record, and I'm not going to get into it, but like, I have a hard time thinking that with his personal history, this is a guy you want to take a chance like that's going to be talking to your players who you're playing these multimillion dollar contracts and who, you know, the agents kind of run the league now. So if he kind of goes off or he goes off, like, you know, he has a crisis or like he cusses somebody out or like he does some of the things he's done in other locations, it's a real risk you're taking with the assets you have on the team. And I understand he's a like Mavericks legend, but really, there are other people you could have brought in on board that wouldn't have the level of risk or the bad experiences in mind. This is me going like as a fortune, let's, you know, if you're a multimillion dollar corporation, why would you do this, right? And I get personal relations. This seems like you do it in a situation where you think the coach is like paid his dues or like hasn't had an opportunity or actually could be good. And this is neither. So I don't get it, and I'm kind of, you know, wondering what's going to go. Like, I'm on a streak of like four unders in a row. What the hell's going on?
I'm on a streak of four fades in a row. Let's go to the Phoenix Suns, the reigning Western Conference champions.
Yes.
Went 51-21 last year. They had the differential of a 56 win team. So they overperformed it by a little bit. The Suns were also unusually healthy last year. Almost all of their best players played 67 or more games. Crowder and Cam Johnson missed a little bit of time.
The Suns are always unusually healthy.
That's true. They have a good medical staff. I mean, with Chris Paul, it might be a little bit different. So I was expecting this to be a much tougher call, but Vegas set the line at 50, so it's basically 51 either way. So 51 and up or 51 and down, and that's an over for me.
That's an over. That's an easy over. That's a very easy.
I mean, the Suns last year, they were one of the only teams that was top 10 in offense and defense. I think that there was some opponent shooting luck. I think there's a little bit there, but I also think that
that team is very solid.
Yeah, the fundamentals on them are totally solid on both ends of the floor. They are
also the best team in the league at road games, so they're right. Really good.
They're also
a worthy finals team.
Yeah, and they're also deep. They have front court depth. They actually added a backup center this year in JaVale McGee, which was, I mean, they do have Šarić out, but like that's not, I mean, JaVale's fine. They'll be okay there. And if they need another center off the scrap heap, hopefully this year they do it. You know, they have point guard depth and, you know, the campaign, and I don't love Elfrid Payton, but he's going to be marginalized. And Shamit, like, I mean, I liked him a lot a couple years ago. He's not quite there. So like this is,
he's going to go to Chris Paul school now.
Yeah. So it's an overplay for me.
Yeah, it's an overplay. I think that, like, even the risk, because, like, Chris Paul supposedly now... So Chris Paul heard everybody complaining about his contract and supposedly just went insane into the Tom Brady kind of health kick, like ultra organic diet. Like
he was already pretty close on a lot of that.
But he went like completely like just like Tom Brady level kind of deal. And like if you look at like I think he's basically missed like three games in the last 3 years. Something silly. Like he's played more games the last 3 years than he has any time in his life. And actually, I actually like really kind of do feel like you can trust his health. I think he takes very well good care of himself. This organization actually shown that they like really develop their players. Monty's done a really good job. Having Chris Paul there is really good. We've seen this at a couple places where like it's really good at developing guys around him. I think he's, because he's really sharp, like he's been on some really historically good defenses. I think a lot of it is because he sees it and he kind of does a really good job at like helping the staff develop. So you're giving Monty Williams credit, but I think part of that is Monty Williams and Chris Paul together, kind of like that kind of synergy plays off each other. To me, it's a very easy over. Like 50 and a half is just like, and again, the reason this is happening is because like there's the LA teams are very public. So functionally, I think that like still the respect for those teams from their fans is basically means that the other teams in the division are giving you great prices. And I think that like, I mean, I love the prices on Phoenix. I think Phoenix over is one of the easy, another very easy. I think that
I don't love their Devin Booker's MVP 33-1. Like that would be a big jump for him.
But it is my favorite division.
So what is it?
It is 225. So
that's good.
That is a great price on.
Yeah, that's very good.
That is an excellent. And you probably will not get a better price on that. Like, so one of the things about these prices on the future of the divisions is you have to think about, am I going to get a better price on this number? And my feeling is that Phoenix is going to go on an early run and get a lead. And I don't think you're going to get a better price than this 225. I think they're going to build a lead early and keep it because of things we'll talk about when we get to the team that's coming up next. So I do think that 225 is the number you bank now. Bank that number now because you will not get a better number than What about their division? What about their conferences?
Where are you seeing their conferences at odds?
No, I'm looking. It's on the sheet.
I know. What I'm saying is, what is the number?
8.5. 8.5. So 2.5, 8.5 for the conference.
I don't love it.
It's not bad though. Like, who's going to win this? I mean, in a playoff series, they've already shown that like they're better than those Lakers.
They beat the Lakers once Anthony Davis got hurt. They were going to lose that series.
Yes, but the Lakers. We'll talk about the Lakers issues now. But in essence, I would put Phoenix at like, you know, they're better than 25% to win that conference.
I don't think they are.
I think they can be basically every other team in a series. And I think that the issue is because the Lakers have some fragility issues. I think the Muzak's a fake, and they're always worse. Like the Jazz are always worse in playoff series because of the fact that like they don't have the home court advantage. So generally they're worse than they are in the regular season, and they really, you know, their coach kind of is bad in these playoff series. He makes really weird and strange adjustments, and he always costs them a game. So there's no chance I'm picking the Jazz over the Suns in a series. So given that 8.5-1 to win the West is really good, particularly like given the rest, like I actually kind of like the two. I mean, I think I didn't mention it, but like Portland at 30-1 and Phoenix at like 8.5-1 are really good conference bets.
I don't think Portland's going to win the West. They're not good enough.
I think, but again, I don't think the West is that good. I think that like
somebody will be good. I mean, if Kawhi comes back or the Lakers figure it out, like I think there's
enough holes that like Portland at 30-1 is really interesting.
We have a difference of opinion. That's okay.
I mean, I'm gonna put like Division 10 tomorrow. I'm gonna put like Arturo likes Portland. I'm talking myself into Portland, but yes, I like it at 31. I think they. I mean, if they win, like I'm still thinking. Like I think any West team is getting murdered, killed by the Nets or the Bucks. I just think that's too much of an ask for any of these teams. But I do like their odds there. Like same thing with the Suns. Like, so Suns. I think the Suns division bet is like one of my favorite bets on the board. Suns. Would you like that one too?
I like it a lot. I don't know if I'll have to think about whether it's one of my favorite on the board, but it's an overplay. So that's all it needs to be.
Division and let's see, win division, and I like them to win the both. And I like them win the West, but you don't like them to win the West. Either.
No, that's correct. So we can move on to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers last year.
The old Lakers.
They are very old. 42-30, points differential of a 48-win team. They underperformed their points differential slightly. They also had AD played half the season. LeBron played barely more than half the season. They also changed over the roster dramatically because they sent Kuzma and KCP and Montrezl Harrell for Russell Westbrook. And then they signed a bunch of old guys, as you mentioned, and Malik Monk and Kendrick Nunn.
I believe 14 of 17 guys on this team were born. 14 of the 17 players on this team were born in the 80s.
It's incredible. Yes.
And they're basically, and I actually went and looked. On the history of like old teams, like it's basically them. So like the oldest teams in the like that I can find in the data since 86 is the Bulls and the Jazz and who was the other team? Well, one of the San Antonio teams, the 2008 San Antonio team. And it's a mixed bag because what happens is like there's a point where there's a peak, but like if you look at that Jazz team, they made the finals and they lost in the first round. They lost in the first round because it's like you fall off. So there's a lot of fragility on this team and there's lots of holes on this team because they lost some guys that were really valuable, and at this point AD getting hurt or LeBron getting hurt or some of these guys missing time is a feature, not a kind of like event. So it's a very, very old team. And
but here's where I think I disagree with you in terms of the Lakers as a regular season team. And remember, that's an important, like, that to me, that's gonna, I'm gonna,
they're historically the worst at overall this. So
yeah, but I mean, but so, but here's the, so here, just thinking about it, pretending that the Lakers name isn't on it. So if I'm gaming this out, like I expect that the Lakers will have a very good defense. They've the last 2 years, that's been true. It was impressive for Frank Vogel that it was true even when Anthony Davis was out. It was true even when they were relying more on Montrezl Harrell, Marc Gasol missed time. Their functional depth at center is good. They have Marc Gasol. They have Dwight Howard. They, of course, have Anthony Davis.
They have Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to be relying on him too much. And, like, I don't
know. Right now, Carmelo Anthony is being projected as number six in the depth chart.
I disagree with that. I think he's. Why?
Who's playing ahead of him? Who's getting ahead of him? Like, Bazemore?
I mean, they're going to. I think they're going to play. Maybe he's. He's not going to start.
Let me talk you through the real. This is what the BBM is projecting the rotation at. Is Russell Westbrook is one. LeBron James, two. Anthony Davis, three. Trevor Ariza, four. DH Talen Horton Tucker is five. Then Carmelo Anthony, six. Kent Bazemore, seven. Wayne Ellington, eight. Kendrick Nunn, nine. Malik Monk, 10. Marc Gasol, 11. Dwight Howard, 12. Rajon Rondo, 13.
Well, so there are two things. One, I think that Nunn in particular could end up, if he's playing well.
Yeah, I think Howard probably plays more.
I think Howard too. But here's one of the other things with Melo. Like, Melo is a bad defender. You and I have been hammering this for years. But
he's the worst defender. He's the worst defender in the league.
But the Lakers have a lot more to paper over that than the Blazers ever did. Like, they have, you know, they're going to play a capable defensive center basically all 48 minutes, and they were good defensively last year, even when they didn't play a high-end defensive center. So, like, yes, is Carmelo Anthony a bad defender? Yes. Do I think he is going to sink the Lakers' defense when he's on the floor? I don't.
Yes.
I don't think he will. I think that's a very aggressive bet to make.
I think that every minute that Carmelo Anthony is on the floor, the Lakers are going to be, like, below zero or close to it.
I disagree defensively.
Overall point margin. I think that's the case because, like, we've seen it. We've seen this before. We've seen this movie before. And the other problem the Lakers have is the Lakers have a problem with kind of, because they don't have enough shooting, right? And they didn't really address that. Because they don't have enough shooting, then what happens is basically you can collapse the defense on them. And if you put Carmelo Anthony into that equation, like, it's going to get really clunky for them, right?
See, I think that's more of a playoff concern. I think it is a valid one, but I think it is more of a playoff concern because teams don't tailor their defense to individual strengths and weaknesses during the regular season very often. Like,
this is a weird roster, right?
Oh, of course. Like, but here's the point. Like, I think that weird, like, that all of that stuff goes at why I think their title odds, why their some of those odds are weaker. But the idea that they can't be a good team in the regular season because they have guys that can't shoot. Like, I mean,
this is Portland. This is Portland last year. The same kind of problems I have Portland. This is a better playoff team or better team without Melo than they are a regular season. As built now for the regular season, with the fragility that's built into this team, because all these guys, like, really, you know, if LeBron has a hangnail, send them home and let him rest, right?
Yeah, and that's why I'm still going under on them, but I'm an under fade, is because I think the full strength version of the Lakers are better than so if I didn't say the line, it's 53. That's really high.
Yeah, it's a really high line. It's but to get people an idea, they won the equivalent of 48 games last year. The over is 42, 52 and a half. The under is 53 and a half. So basically,
it's 53 either way.
And Darko's projecting them at like 48, 49, right? And this is with that like order of minutes that I just read off, which is a pretty sunny day scenario. Like with those, like if LeBron misses time, then is Carmelo starting?
Well, another way of putting it is the Lakers played at a 55 win pace in 1920 when they won the title. You know, that was a shortened season, but that's what they did.
I mean, 2020,
and that roster was better than this roster.
Oh yeah, no, that roster was wildly better.
And so, yeah, I'm an under fade,
I think the top level three is better, right? But for the regular season, you need depth, right? And we can talk about, like, what I think of them in the playoffs and whatnot. It's a different story. But, like, in the regular season, this roster is really kind of, like, I'm looking, like, you know, like, I'm, like squinting at a piece of paper. I'm like, holy crap. But what is going on here? There's a lot of fragility in this roster, and any injury gets you into really bad odds. If Anthony Davis is out, what are you rolling out? Or, like, if LeBron's out, what are you rolling out?
I mean, that's a big problem, but it's... I mean,
if Russell Westbrook, what are you doing?
Well, I think if LeBron's out, I think you can give Westbrook the keys a lot more. You don't have a ton of shooting around it. You don't have the forward depth, but like
we've seen Westbrook with Carmelo before, and that took Paul George to set it right.
Yeah, or
like not
I mean,
right, but set it like not
LeBron, like he's going to miss some time. He might miss as much as last year. I don't think he'll miss quite that much, but it's I'm an underfade. Maybe I'll regret not playing it. But let's get into some of the other ones. So, LeBron's MVP odds, it's 16 to 1. I don't like that. because I think they're going to be very judicious with him. Anthony Davis is at 30-1. I don't think he's going to have the offensive workload. I think it's more likely that Davis wins Defensive Player of the Year than MVP.
The problem is, like, again, it's Carmelo. It almost takes an act of God to, like, do it. Like, and it took when in his prime Tyson Chandler should have won that, but, like, it's just at this point, it's just because of his age, right? He just doesn't have if he ever had the foot speed, he doesn't have the foot speed now to, like, chase. And really, we've gotten to the point where, like, every team knows that if he's on the court, you just chase on off. Like, you just find him on defense and literally just throw plays at him. And this, like, you were mentioning it's a playoff concern. Not really. I've seen people do this in a game where, like, if he's on the floor, just find him and just run at him, right? Because it's really a much higher V play than anything else you can actually do. So, hey, it's a problem. It's a problem.
I think they have supporting talent. I think that it's going to fit a little bit better. I'm not as concerned about it as you are, at least at the time being. And I could be wrong. Like, I acknowledge.
It's something, again, 53.5. I mean, like, geez.
And is generally the case. I already talked about the MVP odds. If it was a team that were lower on, I think that the title odds are too rich for them. They're too, basically similar to the Nets. Like, that's, to me, that's a little bit crazy. I think they could win the title, but
let me ask you a question. Fully healthy, would you pick the Lakers to win a series against the Sixers, Bucks, or Nets?
I might pick them against the Sixers, but not the Nets for sure, and probably not the Bucks.
But it's close.
Yeah, I mean, remember, you're also getting Doc Rivers, who's not a great player.
Okay, sorry, you're right. Rock Divers with Frank Vogel, yes, I would pick him. I would pick him against the Sixers in 7, but I wouldn't pick him against the Knicks or the Bucks. And I would probably pick the Bucks in 5 and the Sixers and the Bucks in 5.
A Bucks Lakers series would be fascinating. I think I'm a little bit more positive on the Lakers there. I'm not saying I would pick them, but
the problem is that the Lakers Vogel wants to play a style that, like, which is, like, so Vogel wants to play a bully style, and the problem is if he does that against the Bucks will beat the crap because the Bucks want to play that style. That's the style the Bucks want to play. And they have Giannis. And they have Middleton. And they have Jrue Holiday. So if we're going to get into, like, let's start throwing rocks and elbows, this is a style that the Bucks know how to play. So really, I think it's a bad matchup. And also, they have the wing defenders to basically make the Lakers' life miserable on the wing. Like, the fact that Lakers don't have shooters would be a real problem in this case. If I'm the Lakers, I'd rather face the Nets, and that's insane because the Nets are, like, just, like, the Nets would just murder them at full health because, like, they just are too good, right? But really, it's a bad matchup. Like, Bucks and Nets are a really bad matchup for every, like, really they are, like, kind of, it's them, and then there's the rest of them, right? I mean, am I wrong on that? I think it's...
You're more of a Bucks optimist than I am, but I also, like, I'm not sold on the top teams in the West as they stand. Now, we'll see where things are... Yeah. In May, June, like, maybe one of these teams sorts it out. Denver also could sort it out. Like, they're... Oh, that was one we didn't mention before. What are Denver's title odds?
I thought about it. So Denver's title odds are 25-1.
I would consider throwing a small amount on that.
I'm gonna join you. What about their conference odds of 12-1?
So basically what the two of those are saying is that they're about a coin flip of winning. Yeah, I would rather have the conference odds then. I think
what happens, one thing to mention to people is, like, one thing that happens is, like, if a team has never been to the finals before, hello Suns, if you've never been to the finals before, you will not get a call. Like, it just, no, it's like,
well, I think that the team that makes it out of the East will be better than them. That's the other part
The team that will make it out of the East is most likely a team that's that has multiple guys that have rings, have been there before, have MVP trophies. So, like, there's a level of respect that happens. So, like, the vets will get calls in the finals, but, like, you know, Suns really were not going to get a call. And, like, once, you know, Chris Paul and his favorite referee, that happened, then, well, it's got to make things a little bit interesting for him. But, you know, I think 12-1 is a much better bet than, like, 25-1. I think 12-1 for the Nuggets to win the...
Conference.
You're betting that Jamal Murray's going to be back and healthy. And then if that happens, then they're really interesting out west. So, you know, I like it too. Like, you like Jokic. I think we both like Jokic at 6-1 and Nuggets at 12-1. That is a good bet.
So now we can do the last team out of this. It's a wonderful marathon, but it is a marathon. The Jazz had this ridiculous +11 differential on their way to a 52-20 record. That is the differential of a 65 win team, but very few teams ever deliver on that because you have to lose some games. They're over under is set at 53 up or down, and
it's like Darko said, they're over under basically.
Yeah, it's a well set line. I mean, yes. the Jazz are they were somewhat healthy last year. Remember, like part of why they ended up winning quote unquote only 52 games was because they're Mitchell and Conley missed time at the same time.
They're a team that's greater over under.
Yes, they're a team that's greater over. They have a persistent home court advantage. They have their I mean, Quinn Snyder I think is a very good coach.
I think Quinn Snyder is a good regular season.
We'll focus on that. Yeah, but I think they have some structural limitations in the playoffs too. But anyway, that's not a concern in the regular season. The Jazz, like, so for me, I think the logical move here is to go over fade. However, I am going to overplay for a specific reason, which is that I think the Jazz can withstand an injury to any single player other than Rudy Gobert. And Gobert has been really durable. And so
I like that they added Rudy Gay because they needed another defender.
They added a front court player, and like Hassan Whiteside is flawed as all get out, but he's a competent backup center in the exact scheme that they're running. So that's fine. Like, and if he can't do what they want offensively, then he just won't play. I don't know that Udoka Azubuike is ready to step in, but like, for me, it's like the Jazz they're a machine in a very specific way. And like, yeah, they were below this threshold in 1920, but they were above it in 1819. And like, and that team didn't have everything figured out. Like, that wasn't a perfect storm or anything like that. So like,
I wish, I mean, if I'm them, I'm like, I would be calling Houston about their Spanish defender. I think Garuba. Because functionally the problem with the Jazz is that they don't have good wing defense, right?
So it's a huge problem. But like I was saying with the Lakers, I think it's more of a postseason thing. I mean, they were the number one team in defense last year, despite not having many perimeter defenders around Rudy Gobert, basically not any other than Royce.
That injury luck last year.
Yeah. I mean, not horrendous. Like, I mean, they're...
They lost Donovan Mitchell, and they lost Mike Conley.
And they lost them at the same time, which is a big problem.
You're right. I think their depth is better this year. And they also get full home court advantage. So yeah, I mean, I think 53, and they're historically a very good over team. So I'm good with going overplay on them. You said over fade, right?
I said overplay. No, I'm playing it. I said that I thought the fade was the like more prudent bet, but I think they're going to go over. I'm overplay.
Yeah, I managed to get myself to 15 overs and 15 unders.
Oh.
Yeah. Whole
team. I'm at 17 overs.
17 overs, yes.
I am optimistic sometimes, but I also think some of these lines, like there were a couple teams that I expected to go under on, but then the line was just low, and so I was like, okay, I'm gonna do that. For the Jazz,
I don't think any Jazz is winning the MVP.
No, I don't think so either. And I think of them as a worse playoff team than regular season team, which generally means that I'm lower on their conference championship odds and title odds.
What about the 225 for them to win the division?
So it's 225 to pays out.
Negative.
I just don't think that's a good use of money. Like, you know, you're tying it up for 8 months or whatever. Do I think they're going to win the division? Yes. Especially with Jamal Murray out. But like, yeah, like what do you, okay, so you're betting $225 to get 100? Like, why? Do I think they'll do it? Yes. But like, yeah,
I'd rather bet Bones Highland for like, if I'm going to like bet against them, I'd rather bet Bones Highland. Let them put in a likes Bones Highland, which I missed the first time. Bones Highland at 100-1. I was thinking about the Nuggets again. ROI. But yeah, no, I don't like, so I was jokingly calling them the Muzaks in playoffs because like really kind of, they're not, like their edges on the play in the regular season kind of go away in the playoffs, and they like, I don't like, Snyder tends to do just some really kind of, what are you doing things in the playoffs. So yeah, I don't like their odds in a series, and I think that the teams below, like if they were playing the Lakers, as much as I think they're better regular season team than the Lakers, but the Lakers are the playoff team. And like Vogel's actually like would put them in really bad situations with the roster that he has, right? Because again, regular season and the playoffs are not the same deal. Same thing with the Suns, and same thing. Probably, I mean, I think that like I would probably pick. I could see them losing a playoff series to 7 Western,
depending on how healthy everybody is. It's possible.
Yes, and Memphis.
Memphis doesn't have the horses. Same thing.
But again, the problem is like the Jazz are really short one wing defender, and it is kind of like they added Rudy Gay, but Rudy Gay is more like the second, like the backup defender, not the primary. So like all those secondary defenders of like wing defenders that like Golden State got.
I think for me the wing defender would would help, but it's if Donovan Mitchell becomes unguardable, and I don't think he's quite there. I like it.
No, but what I mean by that is, like, so people like to bitch about, like, Rudy Gay. Oh, well, why? Like, oh, they blew by him. It's like, you know, they're blowing by him because, like, Rudy Gobert is having to go up to the three-point line to guard the guy who's a ball handler. That's not his job, right?
Right.
But the reason he's doing it because he's the only guy who's qualified, because, like, all the rest of the defenders kind of suck. So it's not his bad. It's because the rest of the roster isn't great, right? So
yeah. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree.
Rudy Gobert. This is going to confuse me the entire season because now we have two Rudys
on the team. I mean, Gobert is, yeah.
Does 750 attractive to you for them to win the West? No.
No. I don't. I mean, there's so many good teams. I don't trust them in that. I'll be happy betting the regular season and then betting against them in the playoffs. And I think that will overall turn out well for me. So
yeah, they're in the same place. Like Snyder's in the same place that, like, he's a slightly worse version of what Bud was, because, like,
I disagree a little bit. I think that he didn't make great adjustments last year, but they also didn't have the pieces to make adjustments.
He always takes players out of, like, there's always at least one game in the series where, like, he takes a player out or he does something dumb and he basically costs a game. And he takes his own players out in the playoffs, which is suboptimal. He doesn't play the rotations. So he overthinks things, and he does questionable things. So that's not value add in the playoffs. So, like, really in a series, you're kind of, like, operating at a disadvantage. And that's kind of, like, not something you can really do at this level anymore. That's like playing. Like, coaches and staffs have actually gotten smarter. So, like, guys who have those functional problems as coaches in the playoffs now are much more reliable. So, like, Doc Rivers is much more reliability now because the other staffs are smart about the things that they can do to catch him, right? And again, small margins in the playoffs are really important. And so, like, it's an issue. And again, this doesn't mean, I think he's not it's a different skill set coaching, like building a system and consistency in building a team versus kind of like the fast decisions in the playoffs, the quick adjustments, and kind of making sure that you just do this, you know, a couple of, like, really plus EV things that, like, optimizing the EV on a single game for the playoffs in a series is a different matter than optimizing it for a month in the season, right? And I think that's kind of like, this is like, I keep telling people, like, it's more important to have a good staff. I think staffs and having a good, solid staff across the board is really important, more than just the head coach, right? So I think,
to give
an example, I thought the Nets did a really excellent job of building a great staff, right? And the Warriors used to have something like this, where they had a staff across the board, and Kerr was good at some things, and the rest of the staff was good at some of the others, but in combination it worked. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I forget the name of the three, like the two. I know D'Antoni, but I forget the name of the other assistant in Brooklyn.
It was Jacques Vaughn, I believe.
Jacques Vaughn. Like, so really, that was a solid staff, and everybody brought a particular skill set, and you could see it that the team was always very well coached and very well prepared, and wasn't giving away any yet. Right. And I think somebody like Bud, his issue was that he's a really great systems coach, but the Spurs coaches tend to, like, have a problem. The Spurs family tree coaches, where, like, they have problems making adjustments in game, right? So guys like Spo or guys like Carlisle will make adjustments in series and in game, and, like, Bud and Pop family coaches will stick to their guns too long, right? And it'll sometimes cost them. Now, eventually they will adjust to it, but it'll take them a longer span to see what the problem is, right? They have to think about it for long. But again, it's fine. It's just, like, it's a different kind of way to think about it. Snyder still hasn't shown me, like, he's still doing the same dumb things he's always doing, taking Rudy out of games when he really shouldn't, right? Or he's like, look, listen, don't play their game, play your game. And that's kind of my issue with, like, you know, with Utah. Is there anything else you think that we missed in terms of MVP or Rookie of the Year? What was your favorite bet?
So for MVP, MVP favorite bet.
I like Lillard. I like Lillard to see the one.
Yeah, you're more of a Blazers optimist than I am.
I just think it's fun. I just think, like, it's going to be a season where, like, I think he's going to, like, just, it's, I mean,
honestly, it might be Giannis just because I think he's so good.
Yeah.
Like, 8.5 to 1, like, that if he plays enough that he's definitely in the mix. Giannis is there.
I think they're going to kind of want to, like, the projection kind of assumes he rests. I think they're going to basically show enough to try, like, it's going to depend on how close they are. I think they want to get the edge on Brooklyn, but if they can do that without, like, killing Giannis on minutes, they will. And I think Brooklyn's also going to want to kind of keep everybody healthy. So it's going to be like a stare down between those two teams. I think both those teams, if they really wanted to, they could win 60 games, right? I don't think either of those teams want to get to a situation where they have to win 60 games, if that makes sense. Because they really want to have everybody healthy. Both the Bucks and the Nets want to have their guys healthy. The Nets in particular want to have their guys Selby, because ultimately everything for those two teams is about that series, right? They're just thinking like, which again, I mean, I think makes sense. I mean, right now, you know, you plan for that series on the assumption that whoever wins that should be favored to win everything else, right? Better than everybody else. Don't prove them wrong.
Who do you like best up for Rookie of the Year? You like Suggs, right?
I mean, I like Suggs. I think Suggs is in the best situation. And my dark horse bet is Hyland. Yeah. But again, obviously with Hyland, it's because it's 100-1 and because I think that there's a chance he can win the starting and do enough. Like, if he actually is good, he doesn't need to be graded. If he's actually good next to Jokic, then there's upside for that Denver team. And I think the upside to that Denver team gets thrown to Hyland, right? So the guy who gets rewarded is going to be Hyland. And again, I also don't think like there isn't a clear Rookie of the Year this year. I think this isn't one of these ones where like, I know it's Hyland or like.
Wait, I think Cade could walk away with it, but I'm not totally sure yet. So I like him a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Cade, yeah, but I mean, the price on Cade isn't good enough to justify me going. I like him. I like him, it's fine. I would be unsurprised if he wins it, but I don't like the price enough to justify. And there's a lot of mouths to feed on it. Like, there's a lot of mouths, and the situation isn't ideal for the rookie.
Yes.
Casey, I don't think Casey's going to just throw production.
We'll see. Anything else you want to discuss? I think we're pretty much there.
What's your favorite division bet?
Ooh. Tough
question.
Yeah, I don't have an encyclopedic on that.
I like
Phoenix. Portland. Phoenix is my first thought, though.
No, Phoenix is good, but I like Portland better than Phoenix. I think, but they're both good. I think Portland and Phoenix are both good, really good value at those prices. Again, it's 10-1. You're like, oh, yeah, it's a great one. It's a great value. It's like great value in the Northwest and Phoenix at 225. And again, I think that like the thing with the Blazers is that you probably will have another place to kind of like eke out profit, because I do think what will happen is like they'll get close. At some point, you'll be able to kind of do that. Favorite title bet?
It's weird to say chalk, but Brooklyn. I think they're better than 2.5-1.
Yeah, I think I like Brooklyn. I love Milwaukee. I think 9-1 for the defending champion, bringing back everybody, and they're all young, is after Giannis just laid out a 40-burger, like 2 40-burgers and a 50-burger in the finals. Yeah, just did that. Give me that. 9-1 action is good. And obviously, I mean, that 9-1 and 260 action, what you want is to be sitting there, like Eastern Conference Finals, going into the finals, and we're like, yes, I'm set. Yeah, that's really good. What team are you looking forward to watching this season?
I mean, a lot of them. I would say the, like, I want to see full strength Brooklyn. I mean, I think they're going to be an absolute buzzsaw. That's going to be really fun to see. I think the Rockets are going to be a league pass favorite for me. Like, I'm going to enjoy watching them a lot.
I was going to mention the Rockets too. I think that's going to be a fun, interesting team. I think Minnesota's going to be interesting. I think Minnesota might be. I'm curious what I'm going to get for Anthony Edwards. I enjoyed it last year, and I think I'm really curious now. If he kind of like starts rising, are we going to see something interesting?
And then another one for me, Pacers and Celtics, two teams with new head coaches. Like, what holds over, what doesn't? What is Carlisle's scheme? How is it different from Bjorkgren there? I'm going to be fascinated.
I don't know that I'm going to enjoy the Celtics, but I'm going to watch this. I'm actually like really curious to, and I mentioned the Portland, but I'm curious to see how Portland looks without the excess baggage on that roster. Let's see kind of how that looks. And it's a difference with a different coach. And again, I do think that like if Dame's ever going to win this, I think this is probably the year that it lines up the most favorably for him, I think. Actually really interested to be like if they made a move like CJ for Ben, that means like anything you get for Portland right now is real value. Because I do think that a CJ for Ben move really helps Portland, right? Because the particular skill set that Ben is bringing to the team is good, because he's also, it's on a roster that he's going to help, and it's going to help him because he doesn't have to carry that offense. So being next to Dave, he's a guy who'd be a good fit.
They would also have a hilarious amount of good defenders if that's what happens, because I mean, with Nance and Nurk and Cove.
Yes, the amount of defensive length in that team would be really fun. And then like, then you can really cover up for Dame. You know, it's that team, that could be really interesting. Let's see. Memphis, too. I kind of want to see Memphis, too. I think Memphis is interesting.
Hey, I've really enjoyed why I think the Hawks are going to be fun. This is going to be a really interesting year, and all these teams that are trying, like, that's going to make it very different.
Yeah, because of, like, I think that the rule changes have actually, like, the league did something right. I think the both the draft changes and the the play-in. People were bitching about it. But, like, yeah, people were, we had fun games at the end of the season. Everyone was playing hard, you know? And other teams bitching about it were like, you know, they're bitching because, like, oh, LeBron might make the playoffs. Yeah, play hard, man. Come on. And I think, like, you're going to be, I, who's the team? Okay, so if you have to pick a team that's going to be the surprise in the play-in, right? Like, a team that should be higher but it's going to end up in the play-in. Who do you think that's going to be?
Chicago.
I think Miami.
Oh, I think they're better than that.
I think Miami might be in that line. If I had to pick Miami, would be one line. I think something like the Clippers could be in that.
Oh, spot. They could be. Yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers could be. That's possible.
It could be really fun if the Clippers are close to the play-in and then Kawhi comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, like, Kawhi, you know, those pressure rings from back, and they're in the play-in. Like, you could have something, like, crazy, like the Clippers and the Warriors in play-in. I mean, like, who's complaining about these play-in games when you're getting, like, teams, right? I think this is it's going to be a fun season. I'm really interested in a bunch of things. And again, I want to see how it kind of shakes out. Just a lot of interesting scenarios. So this has been fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Arturo Galletti for taking the time to come on. Love talking with him and doing these over-unders, and he does so much great work getting this ready, which I really do appreciate, putting the data together, getting the odds and everything else. It is invaluable for me working on this project, and I love talking about it with him. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter at American Numbers, AmericanNumbers. And there are a lot of different ways you can support this podcast should you want to. You can subscribe, download every episode. That is extremely appreciated because Real GM Radio will never come out on a specific day of the week because it's my availability and guest availability and everything else. You can also spread the word, help other people find the show, leaving a rating, leaving a review in the podcast player of your choosing, or word of mouth, social media, wherever. I really do appreciate that. Like a single episode, like the show in general, tell other people and hopefully they'll find it and enjoy it too. You can also check out my other work. Nate Duncan and I are still doing Dunked On Prime. That's still going strong. We have that big summer league thing. And then hopefully, I don't know the exact timing of the release, Mock Rookie Extensions Pod should be coming out around now as well. So you can keep an eye out for that. You can also check out my written work at The Athletic, and lots going on. This is going to be a little bit of a slower time for me, but there's a lot you can keep an eye on. And of course, Real GM Radio will keep going strong once a week. Have a couple lined up, trying to get everything firmed up between now and the end of the offseason, actually. And then we'll keep that moving along. Love doing the over-unders with Arturo. And if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DanielLarueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get it to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is a promise. I try to respond, but I'm admittedly not the greatest at it. That is not the promise I'm giving you. The promise is to read it and take it to heart. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Healthy lifestyle depends on quality sleep, and Sleep Number is here to help you sleep more efficiently. Sleep efficiency is the amount of restful sleep you have at night and is a key part of your overall health. Here are some tips to help you get the most efficient sleep possible. Reduce caffeine consumption before noon and limit late night alcohol. Get regular exercise during the day, which helps you feel tired in the evening, and keep track of your sleep health with data from your Sleep Number 360 smart bed. Sleepers who routinely use their Sleep Number 360 smart bed features get almost 100 hours more proven quality sleep per year. With that much extra energy, you could get more quality family time, volunteer at a meaningful charity, or exercise, meditate, and reconnect with nature. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep, which starts with Sleep Number adjustability. It's time for Sleep Number's ultimate Sleep Number event. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/podcast1. Subject to credit approval, minimum monthly payments required. See sleepnumber.com/podcast1 for details.
This is John Henney from Henney Jewelers. My family has helped thousands of Pittsburghers celebrate life's special moments since 1887. We are so excited to have our doors open once again. You can be sure we've gone above and beyond to keep our team and our customers as safe as possible. From in-store and virtual appointments to curbside pickup and drop-off, the Henney team will adapt to your comfort level. Plus, you can shop 24/7 at HenneyJewelers.com. We can't wait to celebrate more Henney moments with you. Henny Jewelers, your jewelers for life.